This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3003 for Wednesday, the 5th of February 2020. Today's show is entitled Hacker Public Radio 2019-2020 New Year Show episode 4. It is hosted by Kevin Wisher and is about 162 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is 8th Annual New Year Show. From Star Wars to NASA.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
So, Pokey, album of the week?
I'm sorry, say that again. You were a little faint.
So, Pokey, album of the week?
Oh, yeah. We've been listening to Death is the name of the band. Yeah. For all the world to see.
I love Death. Well, actually, there's two bands called Death. So, which is it? The 1970s proto-punk band?
Yes.
Love Death.
Classic.
Politicians in My Eyes.
Oh my god, that song's so good.
Right?
I really like that
just
song.
That changing tone the whole way through.
Yeah, I like that too. We're gonna do our own show here.
I was gonna say, I'm about to ruin Album of the Month on New Random right here on the HBR New Year stream.
And aren't those guys still playing South by Southwest?
Two of them maybe. One of them has passed on. Well, I guess it's no secret that you liked it, Tosh.
Yeah.
We've almost done, as far as I can tell, our whole next show already, because all I'm going to talk about is my computer hardware playground adventures.
Sounds good.
No, that's not the next show. The next show is going to be the 0.5 where we talk about Star Wars and your eyes roll back in your head and you pass out from the nerdness that Lyle and I am going to throw at you.
My entire just rolled back.
My eyes don't roll back over nerdiness. You know I love nerdiness. It's Star Wars that I don't like. And you don't know that's going to happen. I already texted you and told you that movie was awesome and I was blown away.
Yeah, which surprised me.
I may have recently lost several friends due to my feedback about Baby Yoda.
About Yoda in general? Or just...
No, just Baby Yoda.
Not a fan?
I think I watched the first episode of The Mandalorian. I immediately tweeted that I wanted to kick the thing into the sun and every Disney exec that allowed it with it. And then I replied to myself on Twitter. I'd watched the entire series and I still felt the same.
Yeah, but did you reply with username? Oh, sorry, Joe, I didn't even hear you.
Oh, no worries. I think I got like two episodes left.
The last two episodes are amazing.
I liked The Mandalorian, but I still hate Baby Yoda with the fire of a thousand.
Baby Yoda is a thing that I feel like was conjured up by focus groups to find the cutest thing in the world, and I'm still okay with it because it is the cutest thing in the world.
Were Disney focus groups. That's why it needs to burn.
I'm with you on that one. And also, Baby Muppets have already been done. They work fine in cartoons. They do not work good as puppets. They're super creepy. Why didn't they know this?
Actually, I would argue it doesn't look super creepy.
I just think it's the physical embodiment of all smugness.
I don't know. My daughter is right about the same kind of like maturity level as Baby Yoda. And I see Baby Yoda do a thing and I'm like, that's totally something my daughter would do. So it just cracks me up.
You see, you just related him to your daughter, so I won't make a joke about the hamster birds pecking his eyes out.
You should totally make that joke.
Yeah, the hamster birds can die too.
What if they overwhelmed him in numbers, like he'd lightsaber the first few, but eventually they overwhelmed him and pecked his eyes out?
Then we know for sure it was made by Disney.
He could have robot eyes like Luke and Darth Vader had robot parts, not their eyes specifically.
Still Disney.
Next thing you know, they'd be selling robot eyes.
Exactly. Joe, in the Disney store.
Your vape pen totally breaks the noise floor of your Vox.
Awesome. I'll remember to mute.
No, don't.
You do whatever you like, Joe. I just thought you should know.
Thank you.
Now I'm imagining a hardware project where like you can hook a vape box, also be the push to talk key for your mumble.
I can do this.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I could too.
Well, it's got to be on a timer. So you take your hit off your vape pen, and as soon as you stop, you've got like 45 seconds to say what you got to say, and then it keys off and it's somebody else's turn.
No, this is the next big podcast. It's just vaping noises.
I guarantee you it exists.
It probably does. There are probably, I have to say that there are probably several like YouTube podcasts of vapers doing nothing but vaping.
This is all reminding me heavily of a 2 second visual gag that I saw. It's probably too obscure to explain, but it was very, very badly chronologically placed.
Well, hang on a second. We got to say Happy New Year's to Greenland, Brazil, Uruguay, and Argentina.
Happy New Year's.
I think we said Happy New Year's to the wrong group last time. I think last time it was Iceland, UK, and Mauritania, and Senegal, and Guinea, and Sierra Leone.
Well, UK would have been about 3 hours ago.
Oh, what am I looking at then? Sorry. All right, maybe this map isn't as good as I thought. It's not showing me numbers. I was guessing. It's showing some numbers, not a lot of them.
According to the show notes, it's Brazil, Argentina, and 7 more. Question mark what the 7 more are. But Brazil and Argentina, you get a call out.
Yeah, yeah, I just said that. And Greenland.
I'm guessing the 7 more would be sort of other places on East Coast, South America.
And someone's really got to keep an eye out. This is one of the tricky ones. Because in a half an hour, we got to say Happy New Year's to Newfoundland.
Okay, silly question. I know because I'm pretty familiar with most of your voices from podcasts. But what does everyone run as their daily driver desktop system?
Can you guess what I run?
Maybe Ubuntu?
Close.
FXB, can you get up on your mic just a little more or pot it up?
Oh, am I low?
Yeah, very.
Give me a sec.
And sadly, since you asked what my daily driver is, I have to say Android, Lineage OS specifically.
Well, I'm on a podcast called The Mintcast. So, guesses what my daily driver is?
I guess Arch.
Oh, sorry. Am I sounding any better?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, sorry about that. Okay, so we got Mint, Lineage. Who else?
So I run. Well, during the day for work, I have to run macOS, which makes me want to like bang my head against the wall until it stops working. But other than that, at home, I use Arch with GNOME.
Yeah, that's fair.
And while Lineage is my daily driver, when I power up a computer, it's also Mint.
Ah, fair. Also fair.
Though I'm still very, very, as I said before, and was talking about earlier when you weren't here, I'm especially fond of Salix.
Yeah, Salix is nifty. I'm mostly, for the sake of completeness, I'm mostly Ubuntu Mate on my own stuff. I'm forced to run vanilla Ubuntu work.
Where do you work?
It's a company that just sells crap, basically. But it became Necto as they were growing. So
yeah, I run Mate as the desktop on Mint as well. Excuse me.
Yeah, I'm a Cinnamon fan.
Sorry, what was that, Joe?
Not a Cinnamon fan?
I used to be, but they didn't strike out in some of the directions I hoped they would in terms of development, which is kind of why I stopped using Mint as well. But, you know, that was about 5 years ago.
And I've never actually tried it for any appreciable time. I might have given it a test drive just to see what people were talking about when it was kind of new, but I've always just really stuck with GNOME 2, which is what Mate is. There are a couple other desktops that I really like. XSCE specifically, I think, is probably my favorite desktop. But for the same reasons that I run Mint, I run Mate. And that's to support a friend of mine who I convinced to run Linux many, many, over 10 years ago, convinced him to run Linux. And I run the same system he's on, just so I'm familiar with it when he asks questions.
Okay. It's understandable.
Yeah. I mean, I mess around with pretty much all the GTK based desktops. So, I every time something new comes out, I at least get in a VM and see what's happening with it.
Yeah. If I wasn't supporting anybody, I would probably be on Salix, but as I said earlier, I don't know if it's even supported anymore, if they're even updating it anymore. So I might at this point prefer just to move over to Slackware on XFCE. I think would probably be my preference right now.
One thing I will say for Cinnamon, actually, is it is the easiest desktop environment currently to skin to make look like Windows 10 if you really want to play a joke on someone.
Yeah, it's also one of the ones that if you're transferring somebody over from Windows to Linux, it's the most familiar for them.
Absolutely true.
Yeah, I had just the opposite experience when I tried to move my buddy over to Cinnamon. He thought he would like it because it was similar to Windows. He hated it. He couldn't stand any of it. And I would put him back on Mate, and that's kind of been his favorite ever since. But he did not like Cinnamon and hated it. And I don't know, maybe he equated it with Windows is why he didn't like it, but he just didn't.
I mean, that's the thing with trying to switch somebody over from Windows is sometimes they really want to migrate for different reasons.
Yeah, they want away from the Windows experience.
That was actually true for me. When I switched over to Linux and I started test driving different distros and different desktops, I chose GNOME, which was GNOME 2 at the time, over KDE because it looked less like Windows. And I wanted to make that mental separation in my head. I didn't realize it looked more like Mac at the time because I'd never used a Mac. But that, you know, that didn't play into it. I wanted to get as far away from the look and feel of Windows since I was not using it. I didn't want to get confused in my head.
And I do use Mate quite a bit, usually just with X2Go.
With what now? I'm sorry?
X2Go. It's a remote desktop application. So when I want to do things on my server at home, I'll just load up X2Go.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, X2Go is nifty. I've used it on VMs before.
Yeah.
Does that only work with Cinnamon? Is there nothing like that in Mate?
Oh, it works with basically any. Hold on, let me bring up X2Go because it has a list of ones that are supported out of the box, and then you can also put in custom commands for it. Let's see. LXDE, KDE, GNOME, XFCE, Mate, Unity, Cinnamon, Trinity, OpenBox, IceWM, XDMCP. I don't even know what that is.
So basically, it works with X and anything that works on top of X.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I actually found X2Go will work in a lot of places where compatibility with the desktop environment and VNC got broken because of movements to different display managers like Mia.
Let me ask you this. What do you got to do to your router to make a hole, to punch a hole through?
If you can SSH, you can run X2Go. It uses the SSH protocols.
Okay, so yeah, you got to open a port in your router.
Yeah.
It's another remote desktop protocol. You can forward it over SSH just like all the others.
Well, what I'm thinking of is if I could get it working on my buddy's computer, I could use it to, you know, fix problems remotely when I can't always understand what he's trying to describe to me on the screen. But I don't want to mess with his router that way. I don't want to put a hole in his router.
Well, my brother, excuse me, swears by TeamSpeak for that type of thing, or what is it, TeamViewer for that type of thing.
And that runs on Linux?
Yeah.
So what does that do? That connects from, he can initiate a connection with a server somewhere, and then I can too, and it connects us?
Yeah. He starts the process on his end by saying, allow a connection, and then it gives him a code that he then gives to you, and you enter it into yours, and it automatically connects, and then he still has to approve on his end.
How does it cause me to get through his router though? Wouldn't it have to go to a server somewhere first?
Yeah, but it's all on the back end, so you don't actually see any of that process.
And does it stay connected through that server the whole time, or does it just do the handshake and step out of the way?
I think it does the handshake and steps out of the way. It might do it through the server. I'm not sure on that one. Like I said, it's my brother that does that for people.
And who runs that server?
That's a good question.
And if they're good guys, how do we support them to make sure they keep running it?
Well, TeamViewer has actually been around for a while. Let me see if they got a wiki page.
Yeah, TeamViewer is a product that's been around for a long time. It's okay. I'm very torn on ever suggesting people use it, though, because it does get used a lot by tech support scammers. Like they actually convince people to install the support call client and then really, really mess with their machines.
Yeah. You see the anti-scammers on YouTube, they'll get in contact, or they'll be contacted by scammers, and they'll set something up and they'll see that the person is using TeamViewer, and it sometimes is interesting and then sometimes it's just annoying to watch.
Now, my buddy's really good about being aware of scams. He's very, very skeptical about anything and everything on the computer. So I think I could trust him with that, because he's not going to trust anybody but me to connect to his computer anyway.
That's fair enough. I mean, there was a completely open source project really wish had been continued, but it sort of stopped development when Google Code went away, unfortunately. And it was actually packaged in the Ubuntu repositories as well. It was called Gitzo. And it would form a reverse VNC connection from the person seeking support to the person providing support, so that to approve the support, all that had to happen was that the person seeking support put the IP address of the public IP address of the person giving support into the client on their end. So, you know, they obviously wouldn't anything like that if they weren't familiar and comfortable with the person providing support.
Right. Because you do have to approve it on your end. Well, even with TeamViewer, you have to approve it on your end.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing is, I mean, with Gitzo was, because it was a VNC connection, the person providing support would have the port forward on their end. But obviously, if they were provided, they'd know enough to do that.
That's what I was going to say. Somebody's got to have a tunnel through their routers somewhere, unless you're connecting with a server that steps out of the way. So that,
yeah,
that
I mean, I think, I think in, I think in the case of TeamViewer, like, there is a central server sort of linking sessions.
Yeah, there. I'm pretty sure there has to be. I'll check it out. I appreciate you posting the Wikipedia page. I'll check that out.
Also, if anyone wants to have a really entertaining time watching scammers getting baited, there is a Twitch streamer called Boga, and he is online more or less constantly, either scamming, baiting scammers and really, really messing with them, or creating the tools that he uses to mess with them and showing his audience how he...
Is that the guy that goes in and, like, deletes everything off of their computers and then turns them into the government?
I don't know if he goes that far. He sort of tries to stay on the right side of the law. So he has a nice audio setup where he plays, like, one of a number of familiar characters as far as they can hear over the VoIP that he uses. And then he just keeps them on the line as long as possible and keeps confusing them. So he has like a grandma character and like a sort of late teens, early 20s valley girl character and an older guy character. He plays on the phone to them, and he has virtual machines set up that he obviously lets them remote into.
Wasn't there a piece of hardware like 2-3 years ago that you could buy and connect to your phone that would just run the scammers through list of pre-programmed responses?
I'm sure there are systems like that, but as far as I know, he uses an inbound line to a SIP trunk on a geographic phone number, so it looks like a residential number to the scammers.
Yeah, cool.
But yeah, some of his highlights are hilarious. Like, he's had tech support and insurance and tax rebate scammers on the line for 3-4 hours on the end, had them, like, you know, he's had some sound like they're having nervous breakdowns, bursting into tears, singing him songs, playing into the delusions of the character he plays, that's like a senile grandma. It's hilarious.
Now, I've said this on You Random, but I'll repeat it here because reading this Wikipedia page has reminded me of it. But Dark Reader is one of my favorite Firefox extensions ever. If you like a dark theme, this thing is awesome. It works on just about every web page.
Hey, I've got to watch out for that.
Somehow it just seems to know what colors are light and what colors are dark, and it's very good at inverting them, more or less. The only thing it seems to not do well is like the close buttons that you get in pop-ups, not pop-ups, but stuff like on Wikipedia where they're requesting donations this time of year. It's hard to find the X to close that little piece of the window. And a lot of websites have similar stuff to that. But that's really the only thing that's difficult to see with this. Everything else is so much easier on the eyes.
Yeah, for things like the donate on Wikipedia and things, they'll have odd chunks of CSS they've thrown in for it, and some might not know what to do with them.
You can still find them if you know where it's at, or if you're a good guesser, it's fine. And on Wikipedia, it's fine because you can just scroll past it. After you donate, of course, don't be ignoring donations to Wikipedia.
Oh, absolutely.
Hey, Mongo, you're keyed up full time. Thanks. We can see you keying up, but we can't hear anything except for what sounds like an echo.
He's not using a headset, but he's using the voice activity, or was.
Yeah. Push to talk is really the preferred method for group chats and Mumble. If you need help setting up too, you know, I can step out in the lounge with you. You can text chat for now if you can't speak.
Well, gentlemen, I'm going to bid you a good evening and dip out. Maybe don't tell Ken I was here.
Oh, he's always watching. He knows when you've been naughty or nice.
Damn, I thought he might miss it in the edit. Oh, well. Yeah, I still owe him a show.
Don't we all?
It was nice talking to you.
Yeah, take it easy, guys. Look forward to the next Dev Random.
Oh, it's You Random. I don't think Dev Random's ever coming back, sadly.
Oh, damn. I was actually on that show as shit. Sorry.
I still do the same thing.
Oh, well, take it easy, guys. Look forward to the next You Random.
All right, talk to you later.
Have a good night.
See, Pokey, this is when you promote and you drop the website address right now, and everybody shows up, because they don't have to wait, because tomorrow a new episode comes out. I'm just saying.
It is urandomprobably.org. Damn it.
You suck at promotion.
I'm terrible at promotion. I used to be good at promotion. I was really good at promoting HPR for like 3 years.
Well, that's only three letters, so it's pretty easy.
It was six letters. It was hpr.org.
Okay, fair enough.
But you're correct. Other than that, I'm pretty shit at promotion.
Ooh, I have to tell you something, Pokey.
Yes?
And when I say tell you something, it's something you already know, and I'm just doing it to publicly shame you on stream.
Ooh. Go ahead. Let's shame me.
I'm going to need you to call out that hard drive in your fridge and get the audiobook episode that we need so we can release like the 15 after that.
I'm working on it. I bought a Connecticut Zoink.
You did? You really actually bought a thing?
Yeah, I bought a Connecticut Zoink. I bought a thing.
Nice.
Yep. That's part of the plan. Once the SSD gets here, I'll actually have some room to move that unthawed data.
I'm kind of excited by this. We can release like the 5 years old audiobook clips that we have.
Damn, time flies. That sucks. I wish time didn't fly like that.
I think it's been that long, or close to that long.
It's probably been that long.
Okay, public shaming done. Just had to throw it out there. Ooh, I was going to ask you another question.
I was going to say, before you do that, I bought a SATA hard disk drive connector. And as far as I can tell, that's the brand name.
Nice.
Yeah, because it came from Amazon. The only other thing it says on here is made in China.
For some reason, I thought that was what it was going to say. I don't know why, but I felt like that was probably a good call.
Yeah, that's the thing. What was the other thing you were going to ask?
This is like the dumbest question ever, but I looked it up and I didn't find an answer that made any kind of sense. So what is Advent?
Can you use the word in a sentence other than what is Advent?
Like the holiday Advent, or I guess it's a holiday. I don't know.
Oh, it's like the 4 weeks before Christmas.
So that's literally all it is.
Well, I mean, there's different ceremonies that go along with it. Not really ceremonies, but traditions that go along with it. I would say more traditions and ceremonies for sure.
Okay. That's kind of what I got from my research. And I was like, it surely isn't just that, but I guess it is just that. Okay, cool.
No, it really is just that. Typically in the churches that I've been to, each one of those weeks, you read from one of the different four gospels, since there's 4 weeks to go by. And there are Advent candles. There's five of them really, but there's four of them. There's four on the outside, and then there's the Jesus candle in the middle. And on each of the 4 weeks, you light a different candle, and it's kind of traditional that you like have a kid do it because they get really excited to do it. And you know, that kind of helps to have kids get excited about the stuff. And then the Jesus candle you light on, and it's done a little differently in every church, but more or less you light the Jesus candle on the Christmas Eve service, and you use that candle to light to start lighting everybody else's candle, and everybody in the church holds one, and you stand around and sing a couple hymns.
Cool. That sounds awesome.
It is actually. It approaches fun.
I mean, there's fire involved. It has to be at least some sort of fun.
Yeah. Well, one kid lit one of the windows on fire 1 year, but other than that, yeah. And a couple of years ago, somebody decided that we'd reused the candles too many times and it was time to get all new ones. So they were like, "Here, someone throw this out." And I'm like, "Yep, I'll take care of the old candles. No problem." And I've been making fire starters out of them for a couple of years.
Reduce, reuse, recycle.
I'm all about recycling.
No, I was looking around and there's this thing called Advent of Code, which is like this coding challenge that they do. And I was reading about it and they're like, you know, the Advent holiday. And I was like, What is Advent? I don't know what this is. So I like Wikipedia'd it, and it basically told me what you told me, but I was like, really? I don't remember hearing anybody talk about this holiday, so it's got to be something else, but apparently not.
The other nice thing about Advent is you can get an Advent calendar, which is, you know, just the days of the 4 weeks leading up to Christmas, and each day has a little door, and you open the door, and there's a piece of chocolate.
I'm so down for this holiday. There's fire and chocolate.
Yeah, yeah. You got to make sure if you buy Advent calendars that you give them out at Thanksgiving, because otherwise the kid's going to miss out on the chocolate. And also my fire starters kick ass.
I have no doubt of that.
I think we talked about those on You Random.
I was going to say, you've talked about making them. Did you make those out of the candles from the church?
Yeah, of course I did.
Ballin'.
And one other candle, because the white ones are trickier to use. If you throw a colored candle in with all the white candles, then you can see when the cotton is exposed.
Just melt a crayon in there or something.
Yeah, crayon or any candle, like a apple cinnamon candle that's run out and there's just a few anything that's other than pure white works just fine, so you can see when you've exposed white cotton fibers.
See, to go full galaxy brain on this, you go buy a really nice campfire smell candle and you melt that to make fire starters for your campfire.
I don't think I want to mix artificial campfire smell with my natural campfire smell. That seems strange.
Campfire smelled candles seem strange to me.
Fair enough.
I thought Lyle said he was going to try to get on here this year.
We could text him until he does. Just keep bugging him.
I see that as a challenge. Challenge accepted.
All right, cool.
Oh, man, I just got on here. You guys are being like Schmooby. I can't do it now.
Wait, what?
He like sent this voice thing that's all nice.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, HPR. We don't mean to keep you out of the loop, but Taj and Lyle and I are pretty schmoopy most of the time when we're not busting each other's balls.
Okay, so here's what's going to happen. I'm going to record an audio thing and send it to him live on the show. So here we go. Hey, Lyle, we are live currently on the Hacker Public Radio New Year show, that you said you were going to try to make it to, and you're not here. So I am publicly shaming you because I've already publicly shamed Pokey. Talk to me in a minute.
Wait, what the fuck just happened? He just responded before you sent that while you're recording it. What kind of time shifting just happened?
I accidentally sent nothing for a second. Then I sent the real one. He's apparently typing.
No, that's me.
Oh, so your gift picture still didn't work.
You're shitting me.
That's the second time you tried to send it today, and it's just broken.
That might not even be the same one. I have two. And by the way, for anyone playing along at home who doesn't already know, Signal is bitching.
Hey, the shaming worked.
Hey, Lyle.
I am shamed.
It didn't take much. Was that one text each?
Yes.
That was remarkably easy.
Not that we were hoping for a challenge, but we would have made it funny. Happy New Year, buddy.
You too.
So, sir, are you busy? Are you hanging out now, or you just came to say hi?
No, I was just hanging out at my computer playing some Cthulhu Saves the World. Or, I'm sorry, Cthulhu Saves Christmas.
Is that a video game?
It is.
Interesting.
It's a new instrument, Tosh.
I mean, when Cthulhu's involved, who knows?
It's like a guitar, but it's got 37 strings, and you have to play them all with your face.
And the frets are all non-Euclidean geometry.
Yes, that.
Non-Euclidean frets. You have to push through them from the backside through like an interdimensional glitch.
No, it's a newish game by a developer that I really like. And it, in the opening monologue, fourth wall breaks repeatedly. So
I just love how within 2 minutes we have Lyle on the show and we've instantly hijacked this and turned it into you, Random.
You expected anything else?
I tried to get Pokey to promote earlier, but he didn't know the web address of our website. So promotion fail.
You mean urandom-podcast.info?
See, that's how you do it, Pokey. Just like that.
That was my second guess.
Most likely, whatever your first guess was, I tried to get it and couldn't.
I think he said like urandom.org.
Or .net, or yeah, something like that. Info's good. I like .info. At least it hasn't been hijacked by the .org scam that we talked about on the last episode of urandom-podcast.info.
Hey, there you go. See, you're getting better.
I'm working on it. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, no worries.
That's what friends are for. It's lots of love in here.
So if we hang out long enough and Ken Fallon shows up, can we technically count Ken Fallon as being on U-Random?
He's written us enough emails that I think we can anyway.
Happy New Year to you folks.
Oh, good call, Netminer. Thank you. Happy New Year to Newfoundland. We're only 8 minutes late this time.
If you want to know how to be late, you have to go to a Linux Lugcast broadcast. Right. We do late right.
You gotta say the website. Are they going to jump on you too?
LinuxLugcast.com.
See, that's how it's done.
Yeah, Lyle. .com. How hard is that?
If we got a .com, we'd probably pay more than like $6 a year to host our website.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm only just busting balls.
AWS is good at some things. Hosting our website is one of them.
Is that what .info means? That it's an AWS site?
No, .info means I'm cheap.
Hey, you paid more than me. All my sites are either .tk or .ml because they're free.
I thought .info was just for the cool kids.
Yeah, he said cheap. That means cool, right?
Fuck yeah.
So my goal is either we get Ken Fallon on, and he's been on U-Random kind of technically, or Honky Magoo drops in, and then we have like a U-Random Linux Lugcast crossover.
Ken won't go for that. He'll find a legal loophole to get around that. It's not going to work.
You guys are welcome to join the Linux Lugcast anytime you want to.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, I wish I could most of the time. It's Fridays are just bad. So I would love to. It's just usually I'm not around on Friday nights.
I will warn you, though, Joe, as one podcaster to another, you got to be real careful with that anytime you want to invitation. That has killed more Linux podcasts than I think anything else.
Well, I think it's kind of in the idea of Linux Lugcast that it's anytime you want.
Yeah, pretty much.
Fair enough. I'm 3 New Year's drinks in, so this is not the anytime you'd want me to join Linux Lugcast.
Well, it's not Friday anyway. Although I will say I'm going to start listening to you random.
We got him.
That's not a good idea.
I listen to a lot of podcasts that aren't a good idea.
I guess I am just going to come in and say hi and say goodbye. I was already getting ready for bed. So happy New Year's, everyone. Have a good one.
Happy New Year's, man. Love you, brother.
Love you, baby. See you on our half show that we have to schedule.
Yeah, that.
Taj, I'm really excited.
About?
Well, because it sounded like you may have, no spoilers here, but it sounded like you may have enjoyed the Death album, which means you're going to have to bring it for your next pick.
No, I don't say that.
All right, I won't say it again.
I'm just going to recommend the Proto Man again. Can I do that?
Fuck yeah. That kicked ass. That may have been our biggest win thus far. I guess depending on how much Lyle liked it.
I don't remember that one specifically.
I know it's moved on to like my top 10 list. Maybe top 5.
Yeah, I dig it a lot.
Not like, I don't think they'd make my top 5 or even top 10 bands, but album, definitely. And I guess if I put them on my like top 10 bands list, they'd probably email and be like, yeah, which one of us, because we change all the time.
That's true. It's like a collective.
Sounds like Crew Shadow. They change their band a lot.
You may want to hang on to that idea, Joe, just in case you ever get invited on as a guest host. Guest hosts are required to bring an album of the month.
I could do that. I'd be sure to annoy you with the album that I brought.
Oh, that's the way Taj does it too.
Because it would be like all covers.
I enjoy picking the album of the month for you random to just witness how Pokey is going to say, man, I really didn't like what you picked, but I want to try to make it sound like I at least liked it a little bit.
It's just going to be all metal covers of like random popular songs.
Oh, that's how Lyle does it.
Lyle hasn't done metal in a while.
No, he's been doing punk.
I don't see the problem with this.
Nothing wrong with punk.
I guess it just depends on which punk album you pick.
Now you got me worried. I'm legitimately stumped about what to pick for next month. Thanks, man.
Ah, yeah. No problem.
Well, if you guys are ever planning on inviting me, you probably need a way to get a hold of me.
Yeah, why don't you drop an email in the chat here? Because I think the chat is pretty ethereal. I think it goes away once we close the window, right?
It doesn't matter. I mean, I post that one on, well, at least one of my podcasts every 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's a good idea too, Taj. I didn't even think of that. That's like cross-pollination, and I'm always... maybe not always, but I've always been a fan of cross-pollination with podcasts.
Yeah. But see, here's the thing. Joe has to start listening first because every listener eventually gets invited on. So once he listens, then we'll invite him on.
That's true, Joe. That is how we...
Okay. I will listen to your previous show and I will listen to your one from tomorrow, you said, right?
Yeah. As long as Lyle's script works, which it usually does, it should drop at midnight.
Actually, you could skip the... well... I don't know if the previous show is the best one. The one tomorrow felt really good while we recorded it.
Okay. I'll probably still listen to the previous one anyway.
Tomorrow's episode slaps, as the kids say.
Do they say that now?
They do say that, and I shake my head every time they do.
I've never heard that. That's terrible. It slaps. That sounds
pretty bad.
Yeah, they'll be listening to something. They're like, man, this song slaps.
No, I never heard that, and I have teenagers.
And do you mock them when you do it? You listen to a song, you're like, man, this bass slaps.
Well, see, I've never heard them say that. This is the first time I've ever heard that. I've heard about bass pounding, but never slapping.
Oh, slap bass is a style of playing bass.
Oh, okay.
It's really new. Like, I've only heard it in the last month or so. But if I've just heard it in the last month or so, it's been going on for 6 months.
I guarantee that if my kids ever used those words in my presence, they would never live it down.
Just to be clear, slap bass has been around for... many decades. The word slap, as in whatever Taj just said, is new. I've never heard that before, Taj. I'm glad you warned me.
That's what I do. I go into the trenches, I get all the dumb lingo, and I bring it back for the old folks like us. What was the one that we called Klaatu? I can't remember what it was.
What?
We named an episode after it because it was like we were talking about kids were saying this really dumb thing and they were like, oh, savage. Klaatu is savage.
We have a savage episode?
Ah, oh, Pokey.
Oh, all right. Sorry. All our episodes are savage. You got to check it out at urandom-podcast.info.
That's what I'm talking about.
Booyah. Again, thanks, Joe.
Yeah, no worries. Have you guys ever listened to Electric City Nerds?
No.
No.
You should check that out. One of the co-hosts from Mintcast, he hasn't been on in a while, but he runs that as well, and he's let me guest spot on that once.
So if you've never listened to You Random, you're probably not familiar with the interpition.
What?
Interpition?
What's the inter?
I'll be right back.
Ah, okay, I understand. I got it. It took way too long for me to get.
That's okay. I am totally subscribing to this. This looks cool.
Yeah, those guys are pretty good. And then I tried to get them to collaborate with one of the nerd casts from El Paso. Let me see if I can bring that up real quick. Talk Nerdy to Me.
I think I have heard of that one.
Ah, Taj, after speaking with you earlier this morning, I forgot to ask you a question. I actually do listen to you random. And you guys did an album of the month doing Pink Floyd's Metal. So I was curious if you've heard the Peel Sessions.
I have. It's been a significant amount of time ago, so I don't remember a whole lot about it, but I did listen to it.
I think that there's some of the best just old school Floyd blues extended versions on there. There's like a 10-minute version of Embryo. And as far as I recall, there's only a 30-second version on the published albums.
Yeah, it's really short.
I guess in regards to the topic at hand here, that we've got you random. I believe that if you guys are looking at your stats of where downloads are coming from, I'm sure that I get mistaken for Lost in Bronx because I'm probably 100 miles away from them here in Arizona, and my IP comes in as Phoenix often.
Well, we wouldn't get you confused if you were doing the RSS downloads, because he won't even subscribe to the RSS feed. He just goes and grabs it every month, which I don't understand, but you know, it's what he does.
Ah, okay. Well, that's what I was thinking, is that he would have been grabbing the RSS feeds.
Why wouldn't you?
No. It's Lost in Bronx. He does what he wants. I'm not going to fault him. That's the way he wants to do it. Now, our thing is like we go through FeedBurner for so like our static page makes a feed. We route that feed through FeedBurner, basically to kind of offload where the hits are coming from. And then we get stats from them, but those stats have never been right. But then we host the show on archive.org, and then all the like download hits on that are like astronomical compared to what we think. So it's like somewhere in the middle is probably where it's at.
Yeah, I know we've been over the topic, at least mailing list wise, but getting actual stats on listenerships is never an easy thing, if even possible.
There's only one way to get stats on listeners, and that's to ask them to donate cash. And then you can figure out pretty much for everyone that donates cash, that's like 2% of your audience.
Or you just go with the random way. When we find somebody who listens to us, we just invite them on the show.
Yeah, we make them co-host. Which, Joe, I just thought of something while I was out of the room. Two somethings, actually.
Hmm.
The first is that if you're going to listen to the last show and the next show, be prepared. That's all day tomorrow. That's like 6 hours.
I listen to everything at like, you know, 3x anyway, so it'll be fine.
Okay. Now here's the other thing. Since you've had my back all night long, if I don't know if I can still trust you next year, but for now I trust you implicitly. If you happen to like our show and decide to go back to listen from the beginning, which sometimes, you know, podcast listeners have a tendency to do, if that happens, if you can stand us that much, would you happen to make note of the episode numbers that have commercials in them and let me know?
Yeah, sure. Uh-huh.
This is Pokey trying to offload his homework.
But I honestly can say that I do entirely too much listening to go back through somebody's backlog of podcasts.
Okay, that's fine. I just, like I said, it was on the off chance that maybe someone wanted to do my homework for me.
No, sorry, can't help you.
And the next ask was going to be, can you give me timestamps of when the commercials were?
That would be great if someone wants to. But no, I wasn't going to ask that. Because I didn't think of it. Okay. The reason being, Joe, I wasn't trying to be a dink. I've made a couple of like fake commercials on some of our shows. And it only occurred to me recently that because we're a CC0, I think, right, Taj?
We are by SA, I believe.
All right, since we're CC by SA and all my commercial bits are CC0, it only occurred to me that other podcasts, especially Linux podcasts, may wish to use them, and it'd be nice to pull them aside in case anybody wanted to do so.
Well, I can, when we pull them out, I can just put them up on archive.org and relicense them as CC0.
Yeah.
I rather like that idea. I just enjoyed them.
I just got to find them first.
Cool.
So, Pokey, are you the one that went into the show notes and left the all capital letters notes?
I don't think so. For the next show? Honky. For the last one? What are you talking about?
No, for this.
It's probably Honky.
Somebody really wanted to shout that you ran and took over the stream, which is awesome.
No, I didn't even realize it was a show notes page for this. No, it wasn't me.
And I guess since it is in the show notes, it is now canonical that Ken Fallon is a member of U Random.
So is Joe and Brian and Netminer.
Got him.
Brian, you said
bring up the show notes. Probably should have done that a while ago.
Yeah, could you someone post a link for me?
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't know they existed. Brian, you said you enjoyed the commercials that we play occasionally.
I couldn't tell you what they were.
What was the last one?
No, not at this time of night.
Oh, that's too bad. Because
you are really
one...
like trying to get somebody to do this, man.
No. I couldn't remember which one it was. The next one is either better or worse. So you can either look forward to it or dread it.
I think the one that comes out tomorrow's episode is the first time that I literally almost fell out of my chair. I was laughing so hard when you delivered it on the show live.
That was the one that Lyle pitched in at the end, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that was he really helped with that one.
So everybody knows how the sausage gets made. None of us have heard these before Pokey starts reading them. So we're in real time hearing it just like you guys do.
Yeah, I do. I spring it on them.
I think what it appeals to me about it is my complete distaste for advertising. So it's kind of like a Discordian kind of take on religion type anti-ad.
That's the whole idea, Brian. You totally get it.
All right, guys. I'm going to step away for a few minutes.
Interpition, Joe. Have a good interpition.
Yep. All right.
And I will admit here, especially here on HPR, that it was not my idea. I am not the first one to do it. I didn't come up with it. I'm a copycat, totally. And I'm racking my brain to remember who it was that did it, who did the laudable commercial for, I think it was the first HPR April Fool's show. It's killing me that I can't think of his name right now. Scottish guy.
I don't know. I hear that ads are pretty ubiquitous on all the big podcasts now. I don't know, because if a show has ads, I don't listen to it. But that helps it be funny, I think.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. But the mocking of an ad that everyone has heard a bazillion times was this HPR New Year's Eve, or not New Year's Eve, excuse me, April Fool's show. And that's, I've been trying to emulate that ever since because it was so good. Now I'm going to try to look it up.
Do we know how long we've been doing the New Year's shows? Because it's been a while.
I actually don't.
Aren't you the one that started it?
Yeah.
That's so on brand.
I did, for who, HPR or for me, or what do you mean?
For you to not know?
I do know that it was literally 24 hours of me sitting at the computer hosting.
Yikes.
It was fun. It was crazy. No, I'm sorry. The first one was 12 hours. The second one was 24. The first was 12 hours. That's a mistake. Yeah, and the initial idea was with a 12-hour window, there'd be time enough for anyone on the planet who wanted to participate to get in. And then somebody else, I don't think it was me. I think somebody else, maybe it might have even been Klaatu, the next year suggested that, hey, if it were 24 hours, people could call in and do Happy New Year's when New Year's clicked over. Oh, shit, 3 minutes late. Happy New Year's to everyone who's an hour ahead of us.
Atlantic Canada and Cobra 2, because that's on here, and 26 more.
Fuck yeah, Cobra 2. Half of Brazil, Venezuela, Albania. That can't be real. Paraguay and Chile and Bolivia.
Well, it's 1 hour till we switch over.
I think I might actually make it all the way to midnight tonight. I got to go head over to some friend's place here in a few minutes. And it's only 9 where I am, so.
Yeah, if it wasn't for it being vacation all last week and all this week for me, I would not make it till midnight. So my sleep schedule's already a mess.
Oh, man. That first April Fool's show with the phony commercial was so long ago. It was before we were tagging series on HBR.
I bet somebody we know would ask you to go find it, put tags on it.
I'm still trying to find it. If I knew HTML, I would certainly do tags.
No, I don't even think you have to do, I don't know. I don't think you have to know HTML to do the tags for it. Dave is like compiling them for somehow.
If I recall from one of the community news, I think there's just a way to add tags to the shows just on the website.
Yeah, I believe you're right. Hey, should we like publicly shame everybody to go find an episode this year and put tags on it? Like, so you owe Canada Show and you owe the people on the New Year show to go back and tag one episode that doesn't have any tags.
That's a good idea.
Good thing I just said it.
And whatever day of the month you were born on, the show should have those numbers somewhere in it.
Why are you going to make it difficult?
I thought I was making it easier. Really?
I don't know.
Ooh, I think I just might have found out who it was. He's not taking credit for the show, though, so it might not be him. Damn it. Ooh, I can't even search the page for the word laudable because L-A-U-D-I is Claudio.
Claudio messing it up for everybody.
Wow, I'm going to be at this a while.
I'll be honest, I'm going through looking for shows that don't have tags, and most of them have tags. So this should be pretty easy to knock out people. It looks like about episode 500-ish is where tags start becoming really scarce. So anything below, well, about, let's say, 550 and under.
I swear I thought it was Rowan Golfer, and I just, it's not in his shows. There's one of my shows finally been scrolling up. 589 is when I got in. I was a latecomer to this. Look at all these old names, all these people I got so much love for. 602 was Klaatu's first urban camping show. If you haven't heard the urban camping series, holy crap, have you been missing out? There's a show at the Northeast Linux Fest. That's where me and Lyle met. I don't think I'm going to find it this easily. I keep scrolling and scrolling, and I'm already into shows that I started doing, and I swear it was before I did my first show. I thought it was, I would have sworn that it was one of my influences for starting to podcast was that episode, and I would have swore it was Rowan Golfer, but I'm just not seeing it among his credits, and I'm not seeing it scrolling through here. Oh, there's the first episode by Epicanus, 0757. No, I guess it wasn't an April Fool's show, because I'm searching through the page for 0401, and it's not showing up that way either. I'm going to have to look really hard to find this. Sorry, I was hoping to tell you guys where it was at.
Hello, can you tell me if I got Mumble working?
Yeah, I can hear you now, Mongo. I heard you, Mongo, but you disappeared. Mongo keeps popping in and out of the channel. Is anybody else in here active right now? Or is it just me?
I'm here. I don't know about active, but I'm here.
I think I'm going to pop out into the lounge and see if I can give Mongo a hand.
Okay.
Good idea.
Okay. Hey, Brian.
Greetings.
Where are you at?
Where am I at? Jeez. That could be answered in so many ways. But I'm in Flagstaff, Arizona.
I'm in El Paso, Texas.
I went through there once. I gotta say, I didn't see it in its normalness. It was a super rainy spring, and it was just gorgeous wildflowers everywhere. Oh, it was so nice.
When was that?
Oh, geez, that must have been maybe, I want to say like 2007-ish, somewhere around there. It was a while ago.
Yeah, I was living here back then. I moved in 2016. Now we're just here visiting family.
Moved from where?
Moved from El Paso to Dallas.
Oh, gosh, Dallas. Yeah, I was there twice this summer, actually. I had to drive to Florida, so I tend to take the 287 down through Texas.
Yeah, well, I do quite a bit of driving to Florida, too. And got family out that way.
And now they're all in Alabama, except my older brother. He's still in Florida.
My dad, my stepmom, my dad's mom, and her husband are all in Florida. My sister now, too.
One day I'll have to find my way back that way. I got a house there now. Me and my brothers, anyway. Because my dad's gone, and my older brother ain't going anywhere, so that's going to be ours. It's kind of fancy, little old turn of the last century, 1900s, schoolhouse type.
Where at?
Just inland from Canaveral, basically.
Right
off Mosquito Lagoon. Mosquitoes, of course, we don't really have to suffer much here.
Yeah, mosquitoes suck.
That they do. Has the stream been pretty active for most of the day? I missed it. I had to go to work.
From what I've seen, it's been fairly active. There's been a few people on all day.
Good, good. Here and there. That's kind of the idea of the whole thing.
Well, my family is out by Tallahassee.
Sorry, I'm running around here trying to get some stuff together. I got to go do some visiting.
Yeah. I think we're all about ready to head back to Dallas.
On my way out to Florida, we get over kind of that Dallas area. Usually when I drive, I cut over to Shreveport and head down. But my mom was, we were moving my little brother too, so we had this whole caravan stupidity. She's setting the route, and I could have swore we were going to go through Lafayette. So I was like, oh, that'd be great. I'm going to contact John Culp and say hi. And then, of course, she says, no, we're not going through there and whatnot. Okay. Look at the route. I'm in the car following. Next thing I know, we're pulling into Lafayette. So I missed my chance there. Maybe next run I'll have to go stop over. Up in university or something, say hi.
Yeah, it's always good to take a couple of stops along the way.
Yeah, I gotta say, I finally met someone that I'd been communicating with online here for a while from HPR. And man, it's freaking great. I should take more opportunities when we're anywhere near each other.
I used to like taking the long way from El Paso to Iowa so I could stop off at a bunch of old friends' places along the way, because we knew a bunch of people that moved to the Denver area. So I'd swing through and spend a day or two in Denver just visiting friends and then continue on north.
Yeah, I think that might be what I end up doing next. I got to have a real good friend in Nashville. So when I used to go to Florida, I used to just head straight across I-40 to Nashville and then head south. And it adds an extra day to the trip, basically. But it's certainly worth it to visit some friends. I mean, that friend actually, he stopped through town here recently, and I had some interesting conversations with him. He's the physicist that I did my last episode, Music as Life, on some of his thoughts and research.
Cool.
Oh, wow, I got fireworks happening here. That's odd.
Yeah, seems to be for that.
Yeah, I mean, usually I'll hear some gunshots around midnight, but fireworks are definitely not the normal. They'll get a ticket if they're not careful.
What?
Look at the bottom of the screen.
What about it? 9:33, you're going to bed? All right, well, give me a hug and kiss then. Say hi to everybody.
Hi!
Good evening.
Good evening.
All right, go to bed.
Yes, sir.
Be good. Love you. Go, shoo, close the door. My son.
Early to bed, man.
It's like 9:30.
Yeah, this is usually when I'm trying to make my way toward bed. I usually don't make it there till 10:30 or so, but if I don't get there by 10, then I'm not going to be up at 5.
Yeah, well, my usual schedule is to wake up at 6, but being on vacation, that's all screwed up. But I usually try to get to bed by, well, I try at 10:30, but it usually happens at like 11:30.
Yeah, I aim for a 2-hour buffer in the morning from when I wake up. I don't like to just get up and start running. I gotta live my life before I go give it to someone else.
No, I'm up at 6, and then I try to be done, you know, waking up by 6:30, the whole shower, shave, fun, and then I gotta wake up the kids so that they can get ready for school, and then I'm usually trying to be out the door by 6:45, 6:50.
Hey, you save some time, skip the shave.
Maybe. Makes me look old though, all the gray coming in.
No, it makes you look wise.
No, old. I mean, the goatee has more than enough gray in it. I don't need the rest of it, but I think I am going to try and get up at 5 o'clock tomorrow so I can hit the gym again. Maybe get there before all the new year, new me people.
I've been kind of thinking about that. We got a good pool over here at the university that's pretty darn close to me. I haven't been swimming in ages. And then the other day, this swimmer came in from Santa Barbara and he was talking to me about it. And I was like, man, that's one thing missing in my life out here in Arizona is water, swimming water. When they swim out here, it's just river creek style swimming. Not usually the big quarries and reservoirs I remember from the Northeast where I grew up.
Swimming is supposed to be, you know, really good for you. So definitely something to look at. Low impact.
Low impact.
I just don't know of any gyms in my area that have like an Olympic sized pool.
Well, us being up here at 7,000 feet, like I said, the university, they do a lot of Olympic training up here. So they made a point of doing a large pool facility. I haven't even really checked out what's in there, but it's a pretty big building.
Cool. Now, as I'm getting older, I need to consistently find, you know, lower impact exercises for me to do on a regular basis. And swimming is on my list. I just haven't found a proper place for it.
I've just never been much in the gym mindset. I've always felt like my life should take care of the exercise for what condition I'm in. But of course, that life takes over on that whole realm. Swimming's the one thing, though, from my youth that kind of fits that gym-style workout.
Yeah, I've been lifting weights since I was like 14 or so. I took a little break after I got out of the military, but I picked it up again. And I don't see the point in stopping. Granted, I'm not running as much as I did in my late teens, early 20s.
Yeah, the cardio is the big one. I'm going to have to get a bike here again and start riding into work once the weather clears up.
I'm using, for my cardio, I'm using the step machine at the gym. And I do have a pedaler at home. And I used to do like 2 hours a day, 5 days a week on the pedaler. But it gets to be hard on the joints after a while.
Yeah, I got some cardio last week. I fixed this. It's a 74, 75 Jeep CJ5, old round light looking Jeep. And I'm fixing the suspension system. So I fix it. I go, I'm going to take it around the block. And I make it down to the corner and turn the corner. And it dies like it's out of gas. So I just push it off of the side of the road, and I start running back to the shop. I get half a block, and I start getting out of breath. Like, oh, yeah, man, this is horrible. Yeah. I'm getting old. I made myself run all the way because, of course, I can still do that. But I couldn't believe how fast I was out of breath. So I blamed it on just
how old are you, if you don't mind my ask.
What was that?
How old are you?
I'm 43.
You got like 5 years on me. I just started falling apart early.
Yeah, the key is just don't notice for as long as you can.
Yeah, that was difficult. They started paying me disability when I was about 22 and got out of the military.
All right, I'm being told that I have to go spend the next 2 hours with people that I can touch.
Ah, I understand.
I felt that was kind of polite way to put it, so I guess I'll listen.
I don't exactly have a whole lot to talk about all by my lonesome, so I'll listen to the sound of silence.
Well,
hey, Nat.
Oh, I'm glad you're still on, because I just came back from having a bit of food.
Well, I'm glad that you guys are there too, because I can't take this with me, being on a Wi-Fi only, so enjoy yourselves. I shall be back later, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. I might have to go do that spending time with people in person thing as well. I'm not sure. It doesn't seem like a good plan.
I don't mind it personally, but most of my people don't care for it when I show up. So I was trying to help Mongo get set up, and I can't figure what's going on with him. Every once in a while, I mean, you guys can see it. Disconnected, connected, disconnected, connected, and the server will move him back into the room that he was in. It's a weird thing, and it just drops. It's instantaneous. You barely even hear a drop in his voice.
I'm not sure.
To me, it smells like a networking issue, like the cable coming from the pole to his house. type of networking issue.
Or just a really, really bad connection? Is he wired? Is he wireless?
He says he's wireless, but he's got like full bars. He says he's got a really good wireless connection.
Okay, then maybe his router sucks.
And he said he switched routers too. He swapped them out.
Maybe his modem sucks.
That's quite possible. Might be one of the rental units.
Yeah.
The other thing I thought, he said he's got a bunch of default settings. I think he said his left click on his mouse was the push to talk. So I thought maybe he was dragging himself. I told him to make it a key combo. He was working on that last I talked to him. But he's on a different version of Mumble than I'm on, so I don't even know what his settings windows look like. I can't even talk him through that. He said he was on 1.3, but I'm only on 1.2.19. I didn't even know they went to 1.3.
Yeah, but not in the repo. Let me see. I think you got to get the snap.
I think that's what he said he's got is the snap version.
Yeah, and it does work, and it works well. I haven't had any issues with it. I'm running both. I tend to prefer the older one, though.
Okay. Maybe we get him to install TeamViewer and we fix it for him.
Yeah, no. As fun as that sounds, no.
No, I know. I was only kidding because we were talking about TeamViewer earlier.
Yeah. I hated desktop tech support. Some people are just too stupid to own a computer.
Oh, not this guy. Mongo seems all right.
I wasn't talking about Mongo.
I know you weren't. I just wanted to make sure he didn't think so if he listened later.
Oh, okay. What? Can you help with the tree? Can I help with the tree?
We can't reach the top.
Can't reach the top.
We're short.
You're short?
Yes.
Did you say, can you say that again? Say no, it again.
Oh, we heard it.
Oh, they heard it. Good. That's recorded for forever.
You're just setting your tree up now?
No, we're taking it down.
Oh, you don't have to reach the top of the tree to take it down. Just push real hard. It'll come down to you.
I'm fairly certain that is the case. But I'm going to go help them real quick.
Just let the cat pull on one of the light strings.
Or one of the dogs. All right, I'll talk to you there.
See ya.
So I'm here for about 12 more minutes, and then I turn into a pumpkin.
I'm glad I'm not the only one in here, because I just tried to take a sip on my microphone.
It's that good of a New Year's, huh?
Well, yeah, it's with you.
Aw, I'm still trying to figure out how to supply tags to a show.
Oh, I moved on. I was reading the Wikipedia article for TeamViewer. I was trying to figure out how BDSM can be used for, or TeamViewer can be used for BDSM.
Oh, you apparently just send an email to tags at Hacker Public Radio, and there's very clear instructions on what to do. Let me copy this and put it in the notes.
And then they'll just put a ball gag in?
No.
We're not talking about the same thing, are we?
I guess not.
You do this to me all the time.
I changed my keyboard layout to where my enter key is right next to my space bar, and it's driving me crazy. I'm about to change it back.
Don't worry about it. You'll get used to it. When I changed over to a ball mouse, it drove me crazy for like the first week. But after that, you just get used to it.
Yeah, I'm usually pretty good about switching things. But this one's just, it's too close. And because the way my keyboard is, it's like split in half. But then there's like these thumb clusters. And so I'm not used to reaching the right distance on this thumb cluster. And so I'm hitting the wrong thing a lot. And it's making me angry.
Is this a keyboard you printed yourself?
Yes, it is.
Figured it must be. Can you like print a thumb extension?
No, the problem is they're too close. So I'll reach to hit the space bar and I'll slide off and hit enter. Where I had it before, the enter was on the other side. So it was on my left hand and the space was on my right hand. But I wanted to put control and alt on the thumb keys on the left hand for Emacs stuff because I thought it's probably better to have those on the same side. But I'm regretting my decision now.
Okay. Is your keyboard QWERTY?
It is. I can't be bothered to learn a whole new system. It's hard enough to switch back and forth between Chinese and English on a QWERTY keyboard, let alone on a keyboard that I don't know.
Well, wasn't Emacs sort of meant for a Dvorak layout?
I don't know if it was meant for. It's meant for, what a lot of people think is the Holy Grail is the Space Cadet keyboard, which it had, you know, different keys. The one thing that it has that I have on mine is because everything's in Lisp, so parentheses are huge. So my shift keys on both sides, if you just tap them, they're parentheses. So I have parentheses really fast, just tapping the shift key, and it gives me that. I have to hold it to actually use it to shift. But other than that, I change how I do it. The caps lock key is control on the one side if I hold it down. And then I forget what it is on this side because I don't have any markings on my keyboard. The thing next to the colon and semicolon, I think it's a slash maybe. If I hold that down, it's alt. So I already have that. So I have control and alt on both hands, but I wanted to move an alt over to my left hand too, because that's control and alt are the two big keys to do chords with. So I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out if I like it or not.
So if you hit left shift, it's an open parents. And if you hit right shift, it's a closed parents.
That is correct.
That's pretty clever.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like if I sit down, well, especially since a lot of the code that I write for myself is like racket or it's something lispy, you know, if I have to like hit shift and then reach up to 9 and 0 to do the parentheses, I just get real pissed off.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine that. See, I have the trick where I have my keyboard set up that whatever is the thing that's printed on the key, that's what it does.
That's lame.
But it helps if you look at the keyboard, which I have to do anyway.
I was like that until about 2 years ago, and I finally taught myself to touch type on regular keyboard. The problem is when I went to this keyboard, so like a regular keyboard, you know how the columns are like staggered, they fan out?
Yeah.
So this is not like that. The columns are straight up and down, and they're offset in a different direction. It's supposed to be better for your hand this way, but it ruined my touch typing on this keyboard. So I still at home, because I'm on this keyboard less than my laptop, unfortunately, I still kind of have to look at this one occasionally. Most of the time I'm okay, but just that switching is kind of hard. And like backspace is not in the same space on this keyboard as it would be there. So, you know, it's just sort of this mental juggling game when I come home. I like this keyboard better because I can type on it longer and not feel my wrist hurt as bad as I do on my MacBook. But that's because the MacBook has a shitty keyboard. But if I could just sit and play with this keyboard all day long, I'd be a lot better at it.
I wonder if you can post a picture of your keyboard in these show notes.
Don't know. I'd probably have to post it somewhere and then put a link.
And the link to it, yeah.
I don't know. I actually posted a picture of it on Mastodon today because I had to take the case off to reprogram it. So if anybody wants to know, go find me on Mastodon.
And then scroll back to 2019.
The keyboard's called an ErgoDox. Like if you look it up, they're fairly popular. Mine just has a nice 3D printing case.
DOX or DOCKS?
DOX.
Hey, did I tell you how the adventure with my wife's laptop ended?
I don't think so.
I told you we send it out for repair and they send it back with the wrong keyboard, right?
Yes. I heard that part of it.
Yeah, so they sent me a new keyboard for it. When I finally got to talk to customer support, it took like 3 weeks to where I was available, and so was the third level customer support individual that I had to talk to. And when I finally was able to talk to her, she actually overnighted me the correct keyboard. And, you know, I just said I was going to put it in myself. She scheduled the tech to come do it anyway, but I'm like, no, I'll do it myself and I'll keep both keyboards because I don't think I've ever owned an HP laptop that was consumer grade that didn't need the keyboard replaced at one time or another. So I'm just going to keep it. And she was like, yeah, all right, that's fine. And just when the guy gets there, blah, 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 or cancel ahead, whatever. So she sent me the keyboard, and it's really not a keyboard in that laptop. It's they call it the top cover, and the keyboard's kind of built into it. It's part of it. The whole friggin' computer bolts to that top cover. Every single piece has to be removed from the top cover. Nothing attaches to anything but the top cover. Nothing attaches to the motherboard even, except for the Wi-Fi card and the M2 drive. Everything else attaches to the top cover and is connected to the motherboard or the ribbon cable. I have never, ever been so stressed out working on a computer.
Like the quotient of me messing this up is very high.
Oh, incredibly high. And then on top of, so I'm stressing out the whole time. I finally get the thing back together and I'm still stressed out. And what happens next, I almost left the country. You almost never heard from me again. The battery on this laptop is internal. So it's not, you would consider the battery on this not user disconnectable. So because of that, because they can count on the user not disconnecting it, there's no CMOS battery. They just power the CMOS off of the laptop's main battery. So when you disconnect it, it loses all of CMOS memory and programming and whatever settings are in there. So by doing that, it also will not boot up at all, won't even pretend to boot until you've plugged it back into the mains, into wall outlet power. So when I put this thing back together and hit the power button and it did nothing at all, I almost fled the country to someplace that doesn't extradite.
I'm out of here.
Oh yeah, she'd have killed me. You guys would never have found the body. I'd have been pokey sleeping with the fishes from now on.
So you want to hear something really cool?
Yeah, yeah.
I kept scrolling down of this like report missing tags page. They totally have tables that show which ones don't have tags. So it's really easy. Like nobody has an excuse not to put tags on shows now.
Oh, cool.
Also, we were 1 minute away from 2020.
In our time zone, even.
I know, like for real New Year's. All the other ones are fake. This is the only one that counts.
It's not that they're fake. They just all seem to have had a head start at it.
Or they're late.
I mean, they will be late.
No, I'm calling it. This is the only one that matters.
Wow. That's, yeah. I do not stand with Taj on this opinion. All you folks out there who may get triggered by Taj's.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Paul.
See, the only one that matters. This one. Happy New Year.
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 The East Coast of the United States. Who was that? I just saw Netminer. And who else just said it? East Coast, United States, Cuba, Jamaica, Haiti, the Bahamas, Colombia, Peru, and some countries that are too small for them to print their names on in South America. Sorry, guys. Happy New Year. Welcome 20.
Is it better yet?
It's the roaring 20s. It's either better or it's going to pretend to be better and give you massive hangovers.
I'm okay with that.
Sort of looking forward to the dirty 30s myself, but since I'll be an old man, I'm not so sure if that's the best thing to look forward to.
I mean, we're going to have a depression, right? I mean, that just has to happen.
Yeah, I've been predicting that for a couple of years, though. So, you know, don't take my word for it. Oh, yeah. It looks like Ecuador is in here with us. They just changed over with us. And like the western part of Brazil, not Chile, though. They're like an hour ahead. They're all special. They were looking back on 2019 while we were still looking ahead to the roaring 20s. They're like progressive that way.
Hey, I'm going to publicly shame somebody again.
Is it me again?
No, it's not you.
Whoa.
So I'm going. So not only is there a table of all the shows that need comments, if you go down even further on this page, it's listed by the host. Guess who has more shows with no comments than anybody else apparently on HBR?
Is this me again?
No, spoilers. It's probably the person who has submitted the most to HBR.
Klaatu.
Ding, 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 ding.
Klaatu has definitely submitted. How are you going to shame Klaatu? I cannot stand behind you on this.
It's not shaming. I'm just pointing it out. Like, I think the most anybody has is two lines of episodes, and he has four lines of episodes. So maybe to make up for this, I will go through and do all the tags for Klaatu's shows just as a mea culpa for calling him out and publicly shaming him for not having done it.
Because you specifically said you were shaming him. That's all I'm saying is I can't get behind shaming Klaatu.
Okay, maybe shaming was a little bit harsh. I am going to look you up, though. Ooh, Pokey.
What?
Mm-mm-mm. Shame. Before we for shame.
Tags. I've been around a while.
You have 9 episodes with no tags. Let's see what classics we have here. Down the Mall, Song Fight, and a Song. That's your first that one. That
was my very first episode. Of course, there's no tags on that.
All right, here we go. That's the first one.
I also can't tag that one because technically those Song Fight songs are not Creative Commons.
Okay.
Well, it was before we had all decided that Creative Commons was the thing. I think it was before we realized it or recognized it. I was just using stuff that Song Fight was like, yeah, well, people are going to use this. I'm like, all right, sounds good to me.
Yeah, the second one is you talking about Song Fights more.
Well, that was going to be my gimmick, was to do a Song Fight song at the end of every show.
Network cabling. I kind of want to go back and listen to these.
With Resno.
Yes.
That was the one that people, People commented to me on that one for a long time, like for years. They were like, ooh, that was mentor protege episode that we tried to do this and thus and such episode after.
You get your Nelf episode.
There's like three or four of those. And they were, I think I recorded them all the same day, but at the time the rule was don't post two in the same, it wasn't a rule, but it was recommended that you don't post two in the same week just so you don't discourage anybody.
Oh, this one, it's actually, you just turned me onto this like a month ago, KID3.
Oh yeah, I like that. That's got more features than Easy Tag. Not as easy to use, but it's got more tag ability.
Yeah, it actually fixed our problem of every U Random show being called what was it? Mixdown.
I'm writing about your Mixdown episode.
We were like, how many Mixdown episodes do we have? What was funny, it was like that one episode had all this feedback and everybody was calling it the Mixdown episode. And I'm like, what is happening here? Are we being trolled? Is this what's happening?
Why don't you retards know what tags are?
Well, I figured it out. It's okay. Oh, yep. Another Nelf and taxes. Okay.
I don't remember why I thought those two things went together, but I think taxes was just being able to do taxes on Linux.
More Nelf.
Yeah. Like I said, there was a bunch of them.
OpenStreetMap.
I did an OpenStreetMap one.
Yeah.
Really?
You did.
I've been wanting to do like OpenStreetMap as a presentation for a while. I guess I did do one as an HPR. I forgot all about that.
I think you did. And that's when I started like editing it. It was because of your episode.
Started editing HPR? You mean you're going to put a tag on that one?
Actually, I just scrolled up. The HPR Audiobook Club has one that doesn't have any tags too. So we got to do that one.
That does not surprise me because those are not actually my episodes.
Oh, no. This one is not us. This is before us because it's Badge of Infamy.
Well, I was on it. I just mean it's not. It's credited to the HPR Audiobook Club.
I don't think I've listened to this one, so I might actually listen to the book.
A good book.
This may be an excuse. After I get done with Human Action, I might read this and then listen to the Audiobook Club episode and make that.
I don't remember who suggested that book. It might have been Dan, or I don't remember if it was Dan or me, but such a good book.
All of my things are tagged, and all of Lyle's are tagged, so I'm just saying.
Just saying, huh?
I just did. I mean, I'm just saying.
I honestly got to give that book credit for the book club going as long as it did, because there's been a bunch of books that we did that if we had done them as the first episode, there would not have been a second episode. That book led to some very, very interesting conversation.
Ooh, who was the guy that came on here and just like tore apart like HPR with like how crass he was in that episode? I want to see if his is there and if I can put tags on it.
I don't remember his name. I'm sorry.
It was like Space something, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Well, if that's true, I guess the stuff he did TED tags.
Well, again, it's the earlier shows that don't have them because nobody thought to do them yet. Like, we were so active at the time in like Ogcast Planet. If someone wanted to know a show or wanted to know something, you just get an Ogcast Planet and somebody like, oh yeah, that's episode thus and such, and here it is.
I wish Ogcast Planet was a thing where people were. I'm in there all the time and almost nobody else is.
I can't really do IRC anymore, not from work. Before, I mean, I had a government job where I was not allowed to do much most of the time. So I just sat at my desk and hung out in Ogcast Planet and told dick jokes. I didn't tell dick jokes. I didn't do like set up punchline. I just injected dick jokes as frequently as possible based on what other people were talking about.
Is inject really the verb you want to use in that sentence?
Specifically, yeah, I'm glad you picked up on that. I mean, how good was that for being off the cuff?
Not bad.
Cuff also being pretty clever regionally. They might not use that where you're at.
No, that's not something we use, I guess.
Though cuff and inject would, specifically be two different dick jokes. They wouldn't be in the same one.
Fair enough. I'm just looking at like the subjects that have been covered in these shows, and I just want to go back and listen to a lot of these because this was before I listened to HBR, a lot of this stuff, and it looks like some of this stuff is just so good. Like, probably still.
I just did this. You were out of the room when I did it, when I was looking for the episode that I was looking for. I did exactly this. I kept looking, like, look at all the names. I got so much love for all the names in those shows that people I used to know personally that just, I don't know, we just drifted apart, and which makes me really sad. And I had to call out a couple shows specifically, like Urban Camping. Like, can you imagine someone new listens to HPR and never heard the Urban Camping series?
I think I specifically went back and listened to it because somebody, it may have been you, told me you have to listen to this. And I think that may have been the first time that I encountered Klaatu.
I got a lot of love for Klaatu. I can't deny that. He's one of the few people who's stuck around for so long and has just been so true to himself and to his beliefs and his idealism. And he's just a rock solid dude.
Seconded, even though I tried to publicly shame him.
It's all right. I stopped you from doing that. You don't have to worry about that now.
See, that's what friends are for. You could totally go do tags on the Urban Camping shows because they are not tagged.
I could. I'd have to find your instructions.
Well, they're in the show notes. So when the shows drop, you will find them.
I'll just open them as a tab now and be able to come back to them when I'm sober. Or... Oh, yeah. Look at this table. It's all neatly laid out and stuff. We got shows on Nokia. We got shows on Crunch Bang. I mean, holy shit. How much fun was Crunch Bang?
I never actually ran it. I know everybody loved it, but I may have already been on Arch by that point.
God, even my wife loved Crunch Bang, and she never even used it. She just loved the name.
It is a pretty awesome name. There's a show called Screw You Hacker. Sold.
Talk Geek to Me.
Yes, I missed that.
That's a good series. Wow, Comfortably Numlocked. I don't even remember that one, but that's a great show title. Mash Potter. Boston Bronx has a show called Pocket Full of Miracles. I want to stick my hand in his pocket and find the miracles.
As your legal counsel, I would strongly discourage you from doing so without having proper consent.
I'm sure he'd consent. He's got four hands, remember?
I promise to never speak of this again.
Wait, can we text him and shame him till he comes on?
Probably not.
I don't think I have his phone number to text him.
I don't know how much longer I'm going to last on here because I'm exhausted.
Yeah, I'm getting pretty close myself. Oh, you know, Zolk did a show on DD Wirt. That's cool. I bet that's what got me into DD Wirt. Or Tomato. I guess I'm on Tomato now, but still, I just had to go find out what that was. Good on you, Zolk.
Well, gentlemen, you're going to be calling on my former professional qualifications. I'm a former security guard who spent many a night sitting in a chair, staring at an empty road, trying to stay awake. So now I can go back to my roots and man the bastions of hackerdom.
I'm glad that somebody will be here. I mean, we can't go if there's not someone here. It's just tradition. There's got to be someone at the helm, so to speak.
So are you saying, Netminer, you have the con?
No, I'm trusting the automated systems. After all, it was made by Boeing.
That seems like it'll totally work out.
Now, would you fly in an aircraft with a company name so close to Boeing? I mean, they should really change their name and might change their luck.
Taj, I do have to point this out to you because you may be able to bring this up at some point in the future.
Go on.
Show 727.
Yes.
It's by Klaatu.
I'm scrolling. Hang on.
It's how to root and mod an Android phone.
Yes.
Do you think if one of us brought this up to him, he would even remember owning an Android phone, let alone making a show about it?
I don't know. I don't know if I don't know if he has a phone or what kind of phone it is. Pretty much how he wants to keep it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I can't imagine he's the guy that did an Android show.
Yeah, but it was CyanogenMod, which is basically Lineage.
Oh, is that he was doing CyanogenMod in that episode? You must have clicked on it.
Yeah, I'm looking at the show notes. Need some tags, though. I'm just saying.
Damn, he's going to be the guy that got me into CyanogenMod.
Does all of your media consumption consist of HPR?
For a long time, it absolutely did. Yeah, I'm going to say for a solid 4, maybe 5 years.
That can only turn out to be a good thing.
For a long time, it was. Yeah, man, HPR got me through some rough days, too.
Welcome, Claude.
Happy New Year, everybody, from UTC -5.
Happy New Year, Claudio.
Hey, what's up, Claudio?
How you all doing?
Good now, my brother from another mother.
Yep. Yeah, these gentlemen were folding their tents messily, as I noted. And they were wondering if anybody was going to hang on to keep the lights burning.
Well, I'll be on for a little bit. I just wanted to wish you all a happy new year. Wasn't sure who else was going to be jumping on.
Claudio, I'm going to warn you. Taj is attempting to shame you.
I am not. Oh. Does he have shows that don't have tags?
He's attempting to shame everybody. And I'm afraid you might be in this list because you've been around for a while.
All right, let's do this.
Scrolling.
He's taken to task everyone who's got shows out there that don't have tags and show notes and whatnot on them. And apparently someone's made a handy page where you can identify them. And he's taking people to task, even if you have tagged your shows, that you got to go tag a show sometime this year, even for someone else.
Claudio's looking pretty good. He's only got two shows that don't have tags.
All right, which ones are they so I can fix that?
Episode 672, How I Upgraded My PC.
Ooh, that was a while ago. That's all right, let me take these down. Let me take these down. Give me a sec.
I've been trying to tell him these were shows from before we realized what tags were.
All right, which one was the first one? 672?
672.
All right, and what's the next one?
And 722, which is looks like it's the sequel to the first one.
All right. Now, I'll do what I can to tag it. How would I go about doing that once it's posted?
I just posted a link in our chat, and so did Taj.
You basically just send a properly formatted email with the tags, and I guess Dave Morris takes care of the rest.
Duly noted. I will take care of it.
Dave Morris is the best.
And that will be my first action as New Year's resolution for 2020.
Dig it.
Yeah, I have to dig up the 5150 episode.
That's not a bad idea. Taj, you're a real community activist here.
Well, I mean, secretly what this is all about, I'm really jealous that everybody says, you owe Ken a show. I just want people to eventually have to say, you owe Taj some tags. Because the alliteration, it works.
I'll send you some skin tags if that works.
Not what I was looking for.
Claudia, do you have the good nail clippers with the curve the other way too?
No, but now I'm going to have to look for those.
Oh, they're the best for skin tags.
See, I thought Claudio got on here just because he wanted to finish our Robotech conversation for Mastodon.
No, it's okay. I think we took care of that one.
We proved how big of nerds we all actually are.
Oh, no, I don't think we've done that quite yet. I think we've still got further to go with that.
So I have a document that those of you addicted or afflicted with Emacs might want to look up. I actually have it in hardcover, but I believe it has been released as PDF.
You said Emacs. I'm listening.
It is called The Craft of Text Editing by Craig A. Finseth, Emacs for the Modern World. If you ever should be tempted to begin a improved Emacs, this is the source book for it. This gentleman also created the microcomputer Emacs Mints that ran on CPM and DOS. And allegedly violated his beliefs about Emacs, but when he discovered how to do it, he set up a company and they produced an Emacs to run under CPM and MS-DOS.
It's actually kind of cool.
It was an Emacs family editor. Not exactly Emacs, but using a lot of the Emacs technology. It had a virtual memory system and a whole bunch of things. Doing virtual memory in a real mode machine must have been non-trivial.
I've gotten to the point where I literally cannot imagine doing my job without Emacs. I wouldn't even know where to start with another text editor, especially like OrgRef for writing papers and stuff, because that's, you know, all my research stuff is in there. So it's so much a part of my life.
Well, I'm a Neanderthal. For a long time under DOS, I was running WordStar version 7, a starter kit that was available in as floppies in a book about advanced WordStar. And I've been religiously using plain text for my writing for many years. Although the real Notepad++, I believe, tries to convert everything to UTF-8.
So Taj, I'm just missing the tags for these two?
Let me double check. I think so. The first one, and let me double check the second one. It is missing a summary and the tags.
And that's for 672.
672 and 722.
Oh, so they're both missing summary and tags.
Yes.
Okay, noted. I'm going to write that in the text file I have.
See, we're making HPR better, like one show at a time, guys.
Of course. Now, I just, actually, I got my, I had an account on SDF, and someone was gracious enough to validate my account, so I have an email, so I'll probably send it from there.
SDF is a thing that I've heard about and never, like, attempted on my own.
I had actually signed up before, and I sort of used it, but then I kind of forgot about it after, because if you're not validated yet, your account gets deleted for obvious reasons. And so it happened again to me, and I was curious, and since there were a lot of people that I follow and also follow me on Mastodon, when I recreated it, someone was generous enough to actually validate my account, so I was very grateful to them for that. So I've been using it a lot. I've been on Calm. I've been participating in the B-boards, not much, but just kind of, you know, I lurk and I read the stuff there, and every so often I'll post on there. But as far as using the shell account for anything other than just using the services they have there, I haven't really done anything yet. That may change this year. We'll see.
Yeah, I think mainly through Mastodon and you and a couple other people, it seems like it's a nice little community of people that interact with it, and lots of things going on there.
Oh, no, I enjoy it a lot. Actually, they have they're also affiliated with what's called Anon Radio, which is a live streaming radio, and you have a lot of the DJs are actually members of the SDF. And I usually listen to Snow Dusk, who has the Intergalactic Wasabi Mix, and his show is usually I don't know what it is, UTC. I know that as far as my time zone, it is from 8 to 9, so let's see, what would that be? That would be UTC 1 to 2, I guess. I could be wrong.
That'd be 8 to 9 here, Claudio. I just did the math real quick.
Which means it's potentially wrong.
Yeah. And I mean, probably wrong. We're in the same time zone, so I added them all and then subtracted them back again, and I think I got it right. Stupid like a fox.
Well, gentlemen, I would love to stay, but ooh, I need to get some sleep.
Wait, I gotta ask you a quick question before you go, Taj.
Okay, ask away.
Because you mentioned your actual work that you do. How
yes.
much of your actual work is, like, public information?
What do you mean?
The Grow project that you were working on, how much of that can be used publicly and freely?
As far as how much can the tech be used, or how much am I publicizing what it is?
Yeah, that.
I am no longer affiliated with that project, and that project is no longer technically existing.
Oh, well.
It got swept up in all the Jeffrey Epstein stuff.
Oh, no. Oh, that sucks. That was a good project.
Yes, the tech was good. There are people still out there working on the tech. It's just the organization itself may have not. Some people in leadership there made some bad decisions.
You know what? I remember talking about this now. I'm sorry.
It's all good.
Is as far as the tech goes and duplicating it, is there any documentation out there?
Yes, there's a GitHub for the project to where you can pull down those designs. I'm actually working on a basically ground up redesign for our program to use that takes out some of the features that didn't make sense for what we want to do. And makes it more of a, they were going for swarm networking and getting lots of data and then doing data analysis on all that data. That was never something we were really interested in. We were interested in using the hardware to teach plant science to our cohort kids. So basically creating the appliance itself that can be controlled on the device itself instead of going through a web interface. So that's what I've been working on quite a bit here in the last few months, is just taking what they had and redesigning it to make it easier for our age group of students to rebuild themselves and control themselves and program themselves. So that's been the main thrust of my work currently as far as the research end.
Yeah, I'm looking for, like, specifically how do we grow food in or grow plants in controlled environments and let computers do the shit that humans don't want to do or suck at doing.
I mean, really, it's not difficult, but a lot of the things that are problematic are going to be problematic no matter what, unless you're dealing with like large scale systems. So like CO2 levels, it's really hard to control that in a small environment. Basically what you have to do is just doing a CO2 purge every once in a while. Once you get to a certain point of CO2 buildup in a device or not enough CO2 in the device, then you would vent it to the outside atmosphere until it pulls in enough to reach whatever specification you say, and then close off the vents. Or stuff like that. But as far as like light, water, nutrients, temperature, all that's fairly easy to do. Like anybody with a little bit of know-how with Arduino could set that up. It's just tying all that stuff together and creating an interface to where you can create sort of programs to run on. So say I want to grow lettuce. Okay, what is the perfect combination of light and temperatures of light and light spectrum and intensity of light and what temperature and what nutrient solution do I need? And just dialing all that in to where I could just walk up and hit lettuce, pour the nutrient solution in, plant my seeds, and walk away and come back and there's lettuce.
Yeah, and you did all that, right? And all that's on the GitHub?
Ish. I mean, yes, the original project, they've done some of that. They've worked with specific plants. I know basil was one of them, and I forget what hazelnuts, I think, were the other, that they did their controlled research on, mainly because that's the two. Basil is really easy to do, and I think they were getting funding from Ferrera, which is hazelnuts, to do basically growing the trees in a controlled environment. But I don't think they put anything else out publicly other than that.
When you get a chance, and it doesn't have to be tonight, can you send me a link to that?
Yeah, sure.
Cool. Thank you.
All right. With that, I will now say goodnight. Happy New Year's, everybody. Hope it's a good 2020.
Happy New Year, Taj. Have a good night.
You too, man.
Happy New Year, Taj.
Later, guys.
See ya. Happy New Year.
See ya. Well, right now I'm working exactly on those tags and summary, so hopefully I can get that sent out.
Taj was just in a naming and shaming mood tonight. Don't take it personally.
No, I'm not. Please, if I can do anything that I can do to help out HPR, I'm all for it. So it's customary for us to have the 12 grapes to round out the months of the year once the new year rolls in. But given all the wine that I've had tonight, I think I'm good for the next decade.
Did you say the 12 grapes?
Yeah, 12 grapes. It's a, I guess it's a Latin thing.
Can you explain it? I'm not familiar with it at all. It sounds cool.
Yeah, you like once, like during the turn of the hour of the year, you are supposed to eat 12 grapes, which represent the 12 months of the year. So you have the 12 grapes, and what exactly it's supposed to mean, I don't know, but I know it's customary. I've had to do it since I was a little kid, so we did it today. But yeah, so with all the wine that I've had, I think I'm good for the next decade or two.
Not bad. How's the family, Claudio?
Family's good. The boys are doing good. Much older. My eldest is now in college. He's on his second year. He's already 18, so I'm telling you, they grow up so quickly. My middle one's 15. He's a sophomore in high school, and my youngest is going to be 13 this month. This month for me, not everybody's in 2020 yet, so in the month of January, so he'll be turning 13.
They do grow up so fast. Were you in here earlier when Zoke was in?
No, I missed him. I was actually on here around about 6:30 p.m. or so. So when I jumped in, and I was just going to jump in for a half an hour, but I ended up being here for almost an hour. I was chatting with a bunch of people. I was chatting with Netminer and Moss and Dan from Linux and Link Tech Show. And we just got talking about stuff. And I wish I could have caught Zoke. I know that his son is like huge, because I remember when I first started talking to them, their son was like about the age of my youngest. Yes, Captain Underpants.
That's what I was going to say. I talked to Zoke earlier, and Captain Underpants is married now.
No way. Goodness.
He said he moved out. I thought he said he was married. Maybe I was just thinking of my own kids, but I thought I'm sad I missed Double N Dan.
Yeah, he was on earlier. Actually, it surprised me because I didn't know he was on. I saw that he was there on the chat room. But all of a sudden I popped in, I heard his voice. I was like, oh, hey. So, but yeah, no, I think I heard Mrs. Zoke mention something about that, about him getting married or so. So you might not be that far off. I mean, or maybe I'm also kind of messed up.
I've had a few myself. So, but I he said he moved out and he was dealing with that, the moving out thing. And I thought he said he was married, but I don't know.
Well, there you go. I'm telling you, time flies.
It really does. My youngest is now in college.
Wow. What year in college?
First year, going to a community school. Claudio, you're not going to believe this. I'm already a grandpa.
Wow. Congratulations.
My second grandson is on the way.
That's awesome. No, I can't wait to be granddad. I'm looking forward to it. I love kids.
It's fantastic. It is so great. In fact, my first grandson is from my oldest child. My second one will be from my middle child.
Wow, that's awesome.
It is true. They've moved away, so I don't get to see them much because they're both now related to the military and they're both in far off places. But you know, we do video chat from time to time, and we get to see them when they come home and stuff. But it being a granddad's great.
I can imagine. I can't wait. I know that my boy's grandfather from their mom's side. I mean, they love being grandparents, and they love having the boys over whenever they can and everything. So I'm looking forward to that.
You know why grandparents and grandchildren get along so well?
What is that?
Common enemy.
Yep, that's it's about right. It's about right.
It's not even anymore. It's not. I don't even like fight with my kids anymore, and they don't fight. Well, they don't fight with me anymore. I never really fought with them, but they've even given up on that. It's so nice. It's like the grandkid is like unifying, is what it really is.
Yeah, but but still, you know, you just smile and wave when you send them back home, because you know, you see the look on their face. You just smile. Yeah, there it is.
You know, it's not even like that. It's, you know, so far the time, like I said, she's my oldest with my grandson. She's so far away that the time that they've been here, it's never been like that. It's always been like, geez, I wish they could stay another hour, another day, another week, you know, and see them some more.
No, of course. I know. I'm just messing around. You know, you always want to have the grandkids, and it's nice because you kind of miss that. And I know my boys are all older now, so I miss, you know, that part of when they were younger and everything. And there's times where I'll see, you know, little kids or whatever, and all of that from when my boys were little comes back. And I know that you probably feel the same way. And I guess being a grandparent, you kind of relive part of that. So it's nice. But yeah, you can also, there comes a point where you can also send them back to their parents when you're like, okay, you know, you can go back home now.
You're
at least that's what I hear from everybody that's a grandparent already.
They say it all the time. And you're 100% correct about those days with the kids. And I've been really, really blessed in that I've never been without those days because I got nephews on my brother's side that were right behind my kids. And then we've got nieces on my wife's side that are right behind them. So we've just had a constant flow of small children. And when they don't actually live with you 24 hours a day, you know, you're right. You're absolutely right. They're so much more enjoyable.
Yep. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the day when I have grandkids and holding my grandchild in my, newborn in my arms. It's just all those flood of emotions and feelings and experiences and sensations will just come back from when they were kids. And yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's really good stuff.
So what else is new with you, man? It's been a while. Well, since I was on DevU Random.
Yeah. With me, nothing much. Cabin fever from, not being out there on the motorcycle and just trying to fill time through the winter. We talked about this earlier when you weren't here, but it's okay. We can recover because it's a New Year's Eve show. I've been getting into these old HP Elite books lately, and just because they're really, really nice laptops, really good hardware, really rugged cases, mil-spec cases.
Right.
They're old enough now that they're cheap enough that you can just upgrade the hell out of them for next to no money.
Yeah. Actually, I have not an Elite book, but I have an HP ProBook 4540S that I got a few years ago. It's a used one that I got through a mutual friend at the time. And it's still my main machine. I've actually been thinking about upgrading this year, but I keep looking at this one and say, you know what? This one's still doing me quite well. So I think I can hold on to this a little longer if I upgrade the RAM, upgrade maybe to an SSD or something. But
what's the processor?
It's a third generation i3. It's a 3110M. So it's not the greatest thing in the world, and it'll only take a max of 8 gigs. But
right.
For what I use it for now, I mean, it's doing me well. You know, that I don't know. As a matter of fact, I was thinking of checking that because I know this old Toshiba M400 that I have, the Protégé M400, I've got OpenBSD running on it now, and I'm actually connected to it to Mumble with this Toshiba right now. This one does have a socketed CPU, and I can actually upgrade it. But I haven't even bothered. I mean, at this point, it doesn't even make much of a difference because I have a CPU that'll work with this one, but it's really not worth it. As far as the HP one, I don't know. I'd have to actually look into it and see. But that is something that crossed my mind because of the fact that I had researched the same thing for my Toshiba.
It's all right. I'm going to tell you, I haven't even gone this deep with Taj and Lyle yet, but with these, I've got these two HP Elite books, and one is a 15-inch book, and it's like the second gen Elite book with a first gen Core i5, and it's socketed. So I upgraded to a Core i7, which was completely worthless because the i5 that it had is so close to the i7. There's practically no difference. It's a just name only change.
Yeah, you only see the difference probably in benchmarks and stuff, but really in real world, it probably doesn't mean anything.
No, it absolutely doesn't. Even in benchmarks, you can barely see it. You've got to look for it. But with the other one, I bought a fourth gen 12-inch Elite book, which has got a third gen, an Ivy Bridge Core i5 in it. And they only ever came with dual core processors, but they got all the drivers in the BIOS for quad core processors. So you can literally double the performance of these things. And it's all been
done. Wow, that's pretty nice.
Yeah, and it's all been done. There's pages and pages and pages of people already having done this. And, you know, here's like the best processor to get for it. Because they're limited in wattage. There's no use chasing after the absolute top of the line i7s. But there's like a page on here's the best results people have had with thus and such processor. So I got a core i7, a quad core to replace the core i5 for, I think it was like $60 for the processor.
Right. Right. That's not bad.
No. And that's still core i7 performance because, I mean, I was running Linux on, you know, like a Pentium 4, you know, piece of crap back in the mid aughts, you know what I mean? And now
right.
I can run on a 4-core i7. That's, I mean, even just jumping up to this i5, well, actually it's an i7 now, but the core i5, this is the fastest laptop I've ever used Linux on. It's the fastest computer I've ever run Linux on. It blew me away how fast this thing was. And this thing's production date's like 2011.
Yeah, no, I understand completely what you're talking about. As a matter of fact, I have my desktop, which I really rarely use, but I may end up using again because my boys don't really use it much anymore. It has a Phenom 2 X4 965 processor. And before that, I had an Athlon XP 2400. So that in and of itself was quite an upgrade. Yeah, and I mean this laptop. The Toshiba was my previous flagship main use laptop, which took over the EPC that I had before that. And the Toshiba has a Core 2 Duo CPU. I don't remember exactly which model of the Core 2. I think it's a T7200. I think. But it's old right now. It barely runs much of anything. Minecraft just is sluggish on it completely. But when I moved to that from this Toshiba to this HP with the Core i3, and even just with the Core i3, it was quite an upgrade as far as performance. But yeah, I mean, I even went so far as to get Doom 2016 installed on this laptop. It runs, but it's like 2 frames a second. It's ridiculously slow. So I do want to look for something newer if I can get something maybe this year, preferably something like a gaming laptop, but I don't want anything NVIDIA based. I'm looking for something more of an AMD configuration for the laptops. And I know there's some new ones that came out with a Ryzen stuff that definitely look interesting, especially because I want to see if I can dual boot Fedora and OpenBSD on it.
Sure.
Since the AMD GPU support on OpenBSD seems to be getting a little better. It's not perfect, but they do have hardware acceleration, and there are some games that will run on it. But for anything else like the stuff on Steam, I can always boot to the Fedora side and just run that. And I've always been a fan of AMD, especially once they acquired the ATI graphics, and they really improved that. I know a lot of people kind of crap on the AMD graphics because of the stigma that it's had compared to the NVIDIA stuff, but they really have come a long way as far as the open source driver and AMD's support for the open source drivers. So, I mean, they have my full support, 100%, for a long time now. And I remember talking to Klaatu for a while, and he was like, well, I don't know about that. But I was like, well, you should give it a shot and check them out, because they really have improved. And I think he recorded a GNU World Order talking about that. Not specifically with me saying anything to him, but as far as his perception of the AMD graphics has changed, and he was quite impressed with how they've improved with the open source drivers. So yeah, I mean, and now given Ryzen and how they're kind of spanking Intel with performance, especially going to 7 nanometer, yeah, they definitely look like the way to go. At least, you know, for an AMD guy like myself, yeah, I kind of would love to find a portable machine that could do something like that. As a matter of fact, I know there's some ThinkPads that use some of the Ryzen processors now, and they have the Ryzen graphics, but I really want to make sure that it's not anything that's like comparable to the Intel integrated. I want something that's a little more discreet, that'll be comparable more to the NVIDIA stuff. So I'm still kind of doing my research on that. But I want to see if I can invest on a more of a gaming laptop. Because I have been getting back into gaming, especially with my boys older that they are, being into that. I kind of want to get into that. I got myself I got for all of us a PS4 Pro last Christmas. I've been using it, and I've been getting into some games as well. So I've kind of been getting back into the whole gaming thing. So I would like to do that also on the PC side. So whenever they're using that, I can actually go ahead and play some games on the PC side, be it through Linux or OpenBSD.
Looking for like older hardware, or are you going to go with like a brand new laptop?
Something as new as can possibly be that would be supported by the least common denominator, that being OpenBSD, because I know that as far as the graphics support, the BSDs tend to lag behind Linux in that regard. But regardless, I could always boot to the Linux side if I want to play anything that wouldn't run on the BSD side.
Not knowing what your specifics are and just trying to relate what my recent findings have been, the 12-inch EliteBook that I bought, people are still tricking those things out, and they're using the external card slot to do an eSATA. External graphics. They're putting external graphics cards on these things and like external housings.
So, how are they connecting to it through? Does it have like Thunderbolt or something like that, or?
No, it's what's the card slot called? It's just a small card. I forget what it is, but it's like a 5 gigabit per second bus, and you just plug it in when you put it on your desk.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to try and research that. But, you know, once I feel that I'm ready to make the jump, because I was thinking about that too. This, like, I wanted to get myself a Christmas present. I'm thinking about, you know, a new laptop would be nice. But this HP is still kind of working for me in spite of the fact that, you know, it's a third generation. The laptop's from 2012. I mean, I still can use it for a lot of things. I can use it for Minecraft. I can use it for open source gaming like Open Arena or any other thing like that. The only thing that it kind of chokes on is Doom 2016. So, but I got that on the PS4, so I'm not going to go ahead and replace the laptops just for that.
Yeah, I'm serious though. For the third gen Core i series cards, check out and see if it's socketed and see if you can upgrade the processor, because they're so cheap right now. If you don't go like the top of the line quad cores that are not the extreme ones, the 45 watt cards are like $140, and the ones that are just slightly below that, like I said, I got it for like $60.
Yeah, I'm gonna try and check that out and see what upgrade options I got. I still have to upgrade the RAM. Right now it's got 6 gigs. I used an old module from my son's old laptop that he wasn't using, so I bumped it from 4 to 6. But if I can push it to the max, which is 8, and then see about upgrading the laptop, I could probably extend the life of this thing a little more.
Now, I've heard a lot, read a lot of
Happy New Year from the Midwest.
Oh, hey.
Happy New Year.
Good call. Thanks, Archer.
Oh, Archer finally managed to catch you, even though you missed me earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Midwest, a giant swath of Canada, most of Mexico. Happy New Year. Galapagos Islands. So Happy New Year to all the kimono dragons. Easter Islands, Happy New Year to all the heads. Thanks for pointing that out, Archer. Good call.
Yeah, we got too caught up in PC talk here.
No, I don't mind listening. That's really interesting about those Elite books.
I'm just blown away by them. I really am. They're such solid hardware. Just they're like the other day, I was just messing around. I was just leaning on the thing. All my body weight, no flex whatsoever. It's just rock solid on the palm rest area. I didn't have the screen shut. I wouldn't do that. But
oh, okay.
But just yeah, on the palm actually rest, no flex.
I was actually looking at the ThinkPads for my next purchase, I know there's some AMD ones that have come out recently. As a matter of fact, I think, well, it's not a recent one, but I think it's the A485. Theo Durat, who's obviously the leader of the OpenBSD project, he was looking to get one of those. So if he gets a machine, he definitely makes sure that it works on OpenBSD. So that's a good sign for anything that might come down the line. So,
yeah, the ThinkPad series is the other way to go. And there's a couple others too that are mil-spec like that. And that's what I like about these Elite books is the mil-spec just makes them so solid. And I know that I don't think it's all of them, but some of the T series definitely are also mil-spec, and that's what makes them solid too. But seeing as how I can't afford something brand new, I'm you know, stuck with these older ones, and I'm super happy with them. It blows me away how fast these things are.
Yeah, I actually use at one of my school sites, there's a ThinkPad X230 that's not being used, and so I kind of took that one over and I put OpenBSD on it, and it runs really well. Well, OpenBSD, any BSD really tends to run well on ThinkPad. But just the feel of it, as far as even the keyboard, everything just definitely feels like a well-built machine.
Yeah,
and
that's what
it
I
makes
mean.
A nice replacement for a netbook just because of the size of it.
Yes.
So I might want to get one of those used just to have as like a, you know, a travel laptop just to be able to get on the net and just SSH to stuff or do whatever. Definitely, you know, maybe let some light gaming, but nothing major. And they tend to be pretty cheap.
That's what I was telling the guys earlier, is I found an 11-inch Elite book for my buddy. And I mean, I was thrilled with the performance. He's thrilled with the thing. I got it refurbed on Newegg for like $160. And just recently, like the other day, I was looking, I forget what I was even looking up about the thing, but I saw a review of it from when it first came out and I clicked on it. And that book was over $2,000 when it was new, and we just got it for like $160.
Wow, that is impressive. And they're still very useful today.
That's what I'm saying. It really is. Even the dual core i7s with the ultra low energy usage, that thing was a rocket ship. I mean, we had that thing. Okay, and maybe it's not a rocket ship to somebody who's new to brand new hardware, but with 4 gig of RAM and a spinning hard drive at like 5,500 RPM, that thing goes from power off to a login screen in, I want to say it was like 24 seconds. To me, that is so fast.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. And it definitely boots up pretty fast. As a matter of fact, go ahead and throw an SSD on that and your performance will skyrocket even further.
I'm working on it. I know. My wife, we just bought her a brand new laptop because she works from home quite often, and she got like a tremendous discount on it. So she's got not quite the latest. I think it's an 8th gen quad core i7 and an M2 drive. And that thing gets the login screen in like under 7 seconds. So yes, I get it that the SSDs are very fast, and I'm working on getting one for me first and then see if I can talk him into it for his.
Well, I mean, an 8th gen Intel CPU is not bad at all. As a matter of fact, my niece actually got a Dell laptop, which has an 8th gen CPU for Christmas, and it's actually not bad. It actually runs pretty well.
Oh, it's wicked fast. That thing's, even Windows can't slow that machine down. That's what I keep saying to people, is it's, even with Windows on it, it is that fast. You hit the power button and, you know, under 7 seconds, you're at the login screen, and you put your password in and hit enter. And before you can get your hand to the mouse, it's ready for you to start mousing around. And even though the thing's still spinning, loading up stuff in the background, you can just click on the menu, open Firefox, open LibreOffice, and it just pops up. It's right there. It's so fast. It's unbelievably fast. I can't wait to put Linux on that thing when she grows out of it. But, you know, for now, these older generations. I mean, they were still top of the line chips in their day. And these chips came out when we were running Linux on, you know, Pentiums, you know, and going, wow, look how fast this is. And it's basically the same kernel.
Right, right. Give me one second. I got to take care of a couple of things. I'll be right back.
I do too, actually. I got to step away for a minute.
All right, I'll be back in a bit. All right, I have returned. Archer, you still there?
I believe he stepped away.
Ah, okay.
Well, now that the noises have died down some, I can say Happy New Year from the Central Time Zone.
Happy New Year, Yurigami.
Thank you.
So what's good with you? What you've been up to up until this new year?
Was that question aimed at me?
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
no problem.
All right. Yeah, we're just taking a break here. My son is into me to do a coordinated light of some fireworks, so can't actually chat at the moment.
Ah, no worries, no worries. Well, we did as far as us here, I went ahead and did a barbecue for the family, a New Year's Eve barbecue. Did some chicken thighs, some flat meat steak, some top loin beef, and some Argentine style sausages. Everything came out delicious. And of course, I've had my wine, so I got to accompany that food with some wine. So it was good.
Those mangoes still having trouble. I'm using Plumble, so that makes it a little easier.
Sorry, guys. I'm back. I didn't mean to monopolize the conversation. I got so excited about these laptops. They're so easy to mod and cheap. It's like the old days when we were building desktops, you know? Hey, Mongo, you with us?
Well, I don't know. Is this thing working?
Yeah, sounds not bad, actually.
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't bad. I've installed that snap version of Mumble just didn't cut it. So I installed the older version that you said you were using, and that seems to be working, huh? It looks stable right now.
Wow. I would have bet anything that was a network problem. So Happy New Year.
Oh, yeah. It got really loud over here a few minutes ago. I guess it must be New Year's. I was messing with this thing. I missed it. And thank you. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
I'm in Houston, so yeah, it's just after midnight here.
Well, Happy New Year.
Speaking of the New Year, I was in a discussion with my sons about the supposed new decade and the fact that it really isn't the new decade. It's not until 2021. But that might start a whole other conversation right there. Thank you, Pogi. Might as well just agree to disagree.
Well, Richard Stallman says we start counting at zero.
Right, when we deal with computers, but in real life, we don't really start counting from zero.
If I want to know what year it is, I look at my computer.
And that's why we agree to disagree.
Well, my brother was born in 1960, so by starting at zero, we get... You know, it makes things a little easier figuring out his age and such.
I saw an article on the internet about that the other day. I think it says about 60% of people think one way and 40 the other way, but I forgot which it is. I'm of the start with one myself for years.
I remember we went through all this during the turn of the millennium, where people thought the year 2000 was the 21st century. And then there was discussion about, no, it's actually in 2001 that we start the 20th century, because 2000 is the culmination of the 20th century. So this is all too familiar.
Well, the first century started at one, not zero. So the next one had to start at 1001 and then 2001. So same thing for the first 10 years started off at one as well.
Well, as I explained it to my son, is that the 1900s were considered the 20th century. And that's why it culminates at the year 2000. And the 21st century starts at 2001, which culminates in 2100. So, but you know, what are you going to do?
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I'm going to party like it's 1999.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do the same thing. But since I like my synthwave, I think I'm going to party like it's 1989. And I think I'm going to drop off until the sun rises. So you all have a very happy new year. If you're already in the year 2020, and if not, wishing you all the best once it is.
Happy New Year, Claudio. I'm glad we got to talk.
Likewise. Happy New Year, bud. Oh, and tell Taj that I'm working on the tags.
I think he knows.
All right, guys. Later.
Hello.
Hello. This is Mongo.
Got your issues sorted.
I didn't catch that. What'd you say?
Got your issues sorted. You were having problems with Mumble earlier.
I installed an older version. I had installed the latest Snap version of Mumble, and so I went back and did a real install of an earlier version, and that seems to have... I picked up the one that's in the Ubuntu
repos,
and it seems to be working fine now.
Okay. Well, I hadn't had any problems with the Snap, but I mostly use the older version anyway.
Well, I had just reloaded this box here about a month ago. I'd been running 1604 up until then, and I got a new SSD and decided it was time to just clean it up and wipe and start fresh, and I put 1804 on it, and which is finally stable. I really didn't like it at 1804.1 or even .2 very well, but it seems to be okay now. And so I put my new SSD in and installed it, but I was going to try to use snaps where possible to not for things I'm not going to use regularly. So that's what I did with Mumble. So I just didn't think about it not being working very well with this particular computer or configuration or something, but this one seems perfectly fine now.
Cool. So where are you at?
I'm in Houston.
Houston, cool. Somebody else from Texas?
Well, I guess there's lots of us down here. Sometimes it's kind of far apart.
Yeah, well, I spend most of my time in North Dallas, but I'm visiting El Paso right now.
Yeah, you're not in Texas. You're in New Mexico or Arizona or somewhere. You're way too far out away from Texas.
It's still Texas.
I've been there. It kind of looks more like Mexico.
Well, you know, I can. There is a place that I can stand in El Paso and throw a rock into New Mexico and throw a rock into Mexico.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've been to El Paso. That's a little out of my neighborhood.
Yeah, I used to live here.
Yeah, I suspect there's about 20 states closer than El Paso to where I live.
Yeah, no, it's probably what, 900 miles, 1,000 miles?
It's over 1,000, I think. It's actually, I think it's closer to Chicago.
Maybe.
That's what somebody said once. I don't think I measured it, but pretty much everything, you know, lots of states are closer, including, most of New Mexico and Colorado, and certainly all of Oklahoma and Kansas and up into the Poly.
New Mexico's not closer.
Yeah, most of it. I said most of it.
No. New Mexico would not be closer. It can't be.
Most of New Mexico is closer to Houston than El Paso is close to Houston.
No, because you have to go through El Paso to get to New Mexico.
No.
From Houston. Yeah, yeah. I'm serious. I'm right on the border with New Mexico and Mexico.
I know, but if I'm going to say, say Hobbs. I'm going to Hobbs. I'm going up to Dallas, I'll go to Dallas, but I'm going to go up there and hit I-20 somewhere and go into Odessa and go across the border up there, and I'm still 200 miles east of El Paso.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's I've made that trip. I used to drive out to Odessa a lot and New Mexico occasionally. I think I've only been to El Paso once ever, maybe twice. Once maybe as a kid and then once as a young adult, which is, I'm not a young adult anymore. So it's probably over 40 years since the last time I went. But I had a friend that lived there and we went rock climbing while we were there. I remember that.
Yeah, a whole lot of mountain here.
Yeah, we had a good time. But I remember it was really hot and pretty dry, like a lot of that country out there, which it wasn't bad or anything. It's just that it's hot and dry. And though where I live, it's hot and sticky and mosquito infested.
Yeah, Dallas is pretty humid too. Not as bad as Houston.
Yeah, I've got a brother up there in DeSoto, so, but I don't go up there real often.
No, I say Dallas, but really it's Allen. But there's no point in really, you know, naming off all the various North Dallas suburbs.
Yeah, same with Houston, I guess. But I actually live in Houston, so although just barely, I'm just clinging to the very bottom edge of Houston.
So practically in the ocean.
Well, we're a few miles from the bay, I guess, but, you know, 8 or 10, probably 8 or 10 miles to the closest place that there's water over to Galveston Bay.
Yeah.
Close enough to make my homeowner's insurance high.
I imagine. So do you podcast normally?
Do I podcast? No. Do I list podcasts?
No.
Yeah.
I was asking if you actually do podcasts. Right, so if you listen to podcasts, if you knew about HPR's New Year's show.
Oh, I am a contributor of HPR, but just barely. I did a thing a couple of years ago, and I've got two that I've in rough draft right now that were supposed to have been done. One of them was supposed to have been done 6 months ago, and the other one was about the upgrade to this computer that I just did about a month ago, but I hope I'll get them done.
Cool.
I always feel guilty when I listen to them and I realize how long it's been since I've contributed.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I am going to switch computers here in a few minutes and I will be back on.
All righty. Talk to you later.
Yep. Later. Hey, how's it going?
Hello. Hi, this is Mongo.
My backup headset died. The mic died on it.
Wait, your backup headset?
Yep. Yeah, I told you I was switching computers. I was using my backup headset on that one, but the mic doesn't work anymore, so I'll have to take it apart when I get home.
Oh, that's right. You're on the road, aren't you?
Yep.
Just a family holiday get-together thing?
Yeah, letting the grandparents see the kids for the holidays.
Hey, that's what Skype's for.
Yeah, but we also wanted to hang out with some of our old friends. I mean, I lived here for 17 years, and the wife grew up here.
Oh, well, that's worth the trip. You ever ride motorcycles in the desert out there?
No, I haven't ridden motorcycles since I was a kid.
No, I was wondering if that was one of the things you did when you were living there.
Nope.
I haven't ridden a motorcycle since somebody did me a favor and stole my last one back in the 80s sometimes. But I had some friends out in Odessa that used to take their bikes out in the sand dunes. And man, was that a lot of fun.
Yeah, I knew some guys up in Iowa that used to go ditch hopping.
Yeah, my normal thing would be river bottom sand and mud and things like that, and I would go out to West Texas and it would be deep sand, and my bike, you'd have to really work to get up on plane, you know, up on top of the sand. They had these sand bikes that had back tires about a foot wide and the front tires are maybe 8 or 10 inches wide, with and the back tires had kind of little scoops on them to grab more sand. And they were like riding a regular dirt bike in the dirt, and the sand didn't bother them a bit.
Does sound like fun.
Man, that was a lot of fun. I think they were Suzukis. No, they were Yamahas. But that was a long time ago, and somebody probably did me a favor when they stole my last motorcycle.
I think I was 23 last time I got on a motorcycle and wrecked it. Crashing into a trailer will do that.
Yeah, let's see. How old was I the last time I wrecked a motorcycle? I was probably 23 or 24 the last time I had a really, really good wreck. I've laid down in a couple since then, but I was about that age too. What do you do up around the Dallas area?
What do you mean? What do I do for fun? What do I do for work?
I don't know. You a pool shark?
I am production support for Bank of America.
Oh, I've got a
working worth. Go ahead.
I can say I've got a nephew that worked for Bank of America at the North Carolina, Charlotte. Is that where the headquarters thing is?
I think we have people out that way. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we do have a service center there in Charlotte. Mostly, I work with people in New York, Chicago, South America, India, Sweden, London, sometimes Australia, and once or twice Japan.
Y'all gonna have to change your name and not be Bank of America anymore?
Hey, money trades all over.
I guess it does. I don't know anything about banking, but we have an account at the Bank of America right down the street, and my wife's nephew has been working there for, I don't know, like better part of 20 years, I imagine. Last time I paid attention, he was doing some international stuff, mostly in South America. He did mostly business with South America. So, yeah, I knew that.
I think I still have a couple of people that I work with that are in Canada, but yeah.
I worked on the space shuttle program until they parked the space shuttles and fired all of us about 8 years ago.
Well, that had to be fun until it sucked.
Yeah, that kind of describes it. I tried to get a job for a couple of years, but I was a little kind of long in the tooth for the kind of work I did. It's a lot better to get somebody for half the age and half the pay, you know, to do the same job. And I can't really blame anybody for that. So I just said, what the hell, file for Social Security.
Yeah.
My wife's still working, but she's chomping at the bit. She's probably going to quit in the next few months. She works for an oil company here in Houston. So we're looking to move out of we're looking at properties up around Conroe, actually.
Trying to get a place at the lower cost?
A little above the flood zone. The last time it rained really hard here, we were about 4 inches from going underwater. We had a 50-inch rain in 24 hours that came real close to the front door. And we've had a couple of hurricanes and no real damage, but it's like, let's get to the higher ground.
Yeah, I actually had Bank of America ask me if I wanted to move to Houston, and I told them that I was allergic to hurricanes.
You know, we feel the same way about Dallas as Dallas people feel about Houston. My brother would move down here. Wait a minute. My brother lived down here once for a while, and Houston kicked his butt. So in more ways than one. And he's been up at Dallas for around 20 years. He retired, or they retired him. I think within the last year, or about a year ago, maybe he was AT&T, and He got retired about a year ago. He worked. I got laid off. I was 62 when they when they laid us all off. So I had planned to retire at 64. So I looked for a job until I was 64, and then quit looking. I think he worked until he was 67 or something. So he worked a little longer than I did. And but they're not moving. They his wife won't budge. he would like to move somewhere else, but just kind of get out of, a little further away from the congestion and all. But she won't go.
Yeah, I don't think Dallas area is a real retirement community anymore.
And, kids, grandkids and stuff like that around there, we don't have any, so we could move if we want to, but they get kind of stuck. My wife's got a brother in Alaska, and they've got grandkids, and he wants to move somewhere where it's not dark for 6 months of the year and, 40 below zero, and his wife's, nope, I got to stay close to the grandkids.
Tell the grandkids to move too.
Yeah, I don't know. She actually is a. Neither one of them was born up there, but she really really likes it. You was what?
I was born in Fairbanks.
You were? My goodness, that's awesome.
Yeah, my dad's military, so got moved around a lot.
Yeah, they were up there originally because their older brother was in the Army, and he was the breadwinner of the family, and he took his mother and my wife and the young brother, the brother who's just older than my wife, because they were both still in school, so they had to go. The other siblings were on their own, and so the two that were in school went to Alaska, and my wife really hated Alaska. She was there to escape, but the boys liked it and ended up staying up there or leaving and coming back at some point, and making a living of it.
Yeah, well, they do pay you to stay there.
Yeah, I can't imagine that it's nearly enough. It was about 50 here today, and I was like, damn, it's cold.
Right.
But they were up there. They're building a new house right now. I was wondering how they're going to pour concrete. They cleared away snow and stuff to start doing the foundation, and I'm thinking that concrete's not gonna stick.
No, I don't even remember Alaska. We moved from there to Oklahoma not long after I was born.
Yeah, but I've been up there just one time for a visit. My wife lived up there for a couple of years when she was in high school, and escaped as soon as she was able to. In fact, I think she may have told them she was going to go visit a friend in New York and never came back. just abandoned her, whatever fit in the suitcase, that's what she took with her and never went back. But she was not not at all enthusiastic about going back to Alaska. As far as I know, she didn't go back to Alaska until just a few years ago when we went up there for a visit. And she knew she could, nobody would try to make her stay. And we saw whales and moose and eagles and puffins and otters and all sorts of cool animals and mountains and snow in the summertime, and it was pretty cool. I went to a glacier. It's really a neat place to visit. Just don't go. I just don't want to go there in the wintertime. I used to ski up in Colorado, and you live in Houston, you fly to Colorado, you ski for a week, and you come home. You don't shovel snow, you know, to get to work every day for months on end. You don't have to mess with tire chains but a few times during the, you know, because generally when you're on a ski trip, you're just skiing. You're not driving around, so you don't have to do a whole lot. So, and you dress warm and you're doing active stuff and the sun's shining, and then you don't have to put up with the bad stuff. And then you come home where it's 75 degrees.
No, I dealt with a lot of the same stuff in Iowa because the winters can get kind of rough there. So the changing of the tires, the having to shovel my car out of 6 feet of snow in order to go to work. Yeah, that happened once or twice.
Yeah, we had some friends here. Oh, it's been some years ago now, but he had a job interview in Duluth, I think, somewhere up there.
Minnesota.
Yeah, somewhere up there, you know, Minnesota or in fact, I think it was Duluth, but it was like, you know, February, late January or something, and they get off the plane, it's 10 below zero. And it was like, doesn't matter how the interview goes, the decision was made, you know, when they got off the airplane. So they were polite and came back to Texas. And as far as I know, they're still here.
Yeah. I moved south about the time I turned 18 or so and kind of stayed warm places since then, other than, you know, a year in Korea.
I assume that was did with your military service then.
Yeah, way back when.
Which service were you in?
Army.
Yeah, me too. That's good. I might have been there a little earlier than you. I don't know. I got to go to Vietnam.
That sounds like it's a whole lot earlier than me.
Yeah, I was there.
I joined the military in like 1999.
Oh yeah, that was a lot later. I was in Vietnam in 1970.
Yeah, a little bit of a gap there. Yeah, I think my grandpa was Vietnam.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Do we have another Happy New Year to give out?
Yeah, to me. Happy New Year's to what, Mountain Time Zone?
Denver, Mountain High.
Yeah, I was lucky. I was between Vietnam and post-Vietnam civil service.
Yeah, there used to be a time when you could get between wars around here, but it doesn't work that way anymore.
Now, when I was out at MIT, I ran into a couple of people from Vietnam. One was a chopper pilot, one was an intelligence officer. The intelligence officer said things were crazy because normally intelligence people don't do guard duty. However, in Vietnam, every officer had to do everything, including guard duty, you know, in a bunker out wherever. Of course, the military is going to have somebody with a head full of secrets stuck out at where the enemy could snatch him. Makes perfect sense. Also, he said that their scheduling, besides his regular duty, he had to do officer of the day, you know, whatever, officer of the watch, whatever, night stuff. So he often had days that would just tumble into each other because none of the schedules aligned.
Yeah, I believe that, because certainly schedules were a problem with any group. Depends on what your specialty was. They covered the bases, and if it took all of you 10 hours a day, then that's what you did. If it was 12 hours a day, then that's what you did. If it was 16, that's what you did, you know. And sometimes you got a day off occasionally, and sometimes you didn't.
Now, I have three war stories, two from Vietnam and my friends, and one from my brother in the Cold War.
I love war stories.
Okay, well, this intelligence officer said that they were in bunkers and they had this guy driving around in a truck with a bad muffler. He was a major. And he would go around and he would rattle everybody's change for the sign and countersign. And these guys were exhausted and they didn't really remember the stuff. Not that his vehicle could be easily used by anyone because it was a very distinctive sound. Well, he said, they went down to the next bunker from his, did the sign, countersign thing, and then the bunker did a counter challenge. Well, he'd been rattling people's chains so much, he forgot the counter challenge. Well, some bright spark did a mag dump in his general direction, and that officer wasn't seen the rest of the night. But by the rules, since he didn't respond with the proper countersign, he could have been shot.
Well, if that was the rules of engagement at that point, yeah, then that's what you do. Those things happen.
I think the mag dump was done sort of as a pointed instruction, 20 or 30 of them.
Oh, yeah. If he was, if he had a very distinctive vehicle, they all knew who he was when he was coming. Yeah, it was deliberate, but you kind of have to follow the rules, even if somebody else isn't. You just try not to hit them.
Well, the during the Battle of the Bulge, evidently they put Eisenhower or somebody through it. He had to put his ID down and step back because, you know, they had a bunch of German special forces in American uniforms going, you know, doing all sorts of nasty stuff. But, you know, and when they tighten the security down, it doesn't matter whether you're a private or a general, everybody's got to go through the proper hoops.
Yeah, when they want to play the game, you know who it is. They know you know who it is, so you have to act right. But so if they fail to respond correctly, then you have to go ahead and do what you're supposed to do, as if you didn't know who they were. So it's kind of, sometimes it doesn't make a lot of sense. You don't want to kill anybody over it, but and maybe not an entire dump.
Well, yeah, the second story is from my chopper friend who I met at a Linux users group at MIT. He was up in the very edge of South Vietnam, up right near the DMZ. And he got this story from a guy who was doing an intelligence probe into the north with a Kit Carson scout, which is a turned VC. He went up there, up where angels fear to tread, and he found in what they thought was a safe hillside, a battalion of VC having a powwow. Well, he got on his radio and tried to call for artillery, tried to call for aircraft, tried to call for, you know, the good humor man, anybody who would drop ordnance on these people. Well, because he was in North Vietnam, everybody thought it was a spoof of some kind. Well, he goes down to his list of radio frequencies and he gets one that he ain't used. And he reports, you know, here's the coordinates. Says, how close are you to that target? 500 meters. Get two clicks away and call us back. Well, he goes one click away, calls him back, says, fire a ranging shot, and then I will adjust to target. The guy at the other end of the radio says, we do not adjust. Your mission is fired. Well, the hilltop disappears. His Kit Carson Scott is bleeding from the ears from the concussion of the shells. He calls up and says, by the way, who have I been talking to? Battleship New Jersey. The battleship does not adjust because it's just going to remove the block of whatever the target is on.
They don't waste time ranging, I guess.
Yes, when you're going to drop, you know, 9 Volkswagens worth of high explosive on somebody, that's going to, you know, forget AT&T, that's just reach out and touch someone.
Well, it was a real experience, I can tell you that. And I was also a non-combatant person. I did electronics repair stuff for classified electronic gizmos in a building with no windows and barbed wire and stuff and guards on the gate. But every 11 days, I had guard duty on an ammo dump.
Again, somebody with a head full of secrets.
I don't know if I knew a lot of stuff that was real important, but some of it was secret, all right. It was, but we were all on a list that rotated, and it, you know, everybody went. And for some people, it guard duty was preferable to what they did at, you know, every day. I think we had a lot of guys that took code, you know, they sat for 12 hours a day with headphones on listening to and they had to pick that out from a lot of really static and screeching and working the knob back and forth trying to pick out the code. And they had it worse than I did. And so for me, I prefer not having guard duty, but I think some of them probably would rather actually liked it when they had guard duty.
Yeah, well, I used to be a shortwave listener. In fact, one of my shortwave radios was dropped off by a guy who got it at the end of World War II, and it had a lot of the crystal filters and stuff like your code guys would use for CW.
One of my jobs was to maintain radios like they use for taking code, you know, single sideband shortwave radio. And but these guys would sit for 12 hours a day, 50 days in a row before they got a day off, listen to this stuff. So you'd get a call that somebody's radio's not working, and so you go in there and you check, and they just kind of screw the dials to make it not work for a little bit. And so you give them a break, you know, they get to go out and take a smoke break, and you pull it out of the rack and kind of mess with it a little bit and tune it up, get it back, get all the knobs back in the right positions and check it out. Give them 10, 15 minutes outside so that they can clear their heads. You catch one with a screwdriver, though, you take it away from them.
Well, my brother was in a Pershing unit the last of his service in Germany. I mean, actually, he started serving in El Paso in a Hawk unit. And then they shipped him to Germany for one of the, you know, relatively late. This was mid-80s, probably, at most. He was shipped to Germany with a with a Pershing unit. There were a couple of exciting events there, but the last of it, and what brought him home, was he was short, you know, and the Pershing unit was going out on a drill in the field, but because he was going to be short, they said, well, why should he go through another drill when he's just going to go home in a couple of weeks? So they gave him guard duty. And during his stint of guard duty, a couple of ornery gentlemen armed with plastic explosive and submachine guns came over the fence. And Tim fired on or at one of these gentlemen, and that activated the reaction squad, and they took these gentlemen into custody and whatnot. And that's how my brother, who was a mechanic by trade, got into a hot portion of the Cold War. He said as he was clearing post at the end, after such an incident, they generally expedite your return home, or at least out of theater or wherever. He said he had to deal with the liaison with the Germans. Well, evidently, after our people caught the intruders, they handed them over to the German authorities, and he was quietly told that those gentlemen never made it to jail. They just sort of evaporated somewhere in the woods of Germany.
Wow.
Well, when the opposition comes over the wire with blood in their eye, the Germans lose their limited sense of humor entirely. So I suspect there's some patch of German woods that's growing a little better because of the contributions of these Soviet socialist brothers. The people, since they were caught red-handed, the incident virtually didn't happen, and if it didn't happen, there weren't any people to lock up, were they?
Yeah, I guess not. I've heard too many stories like that, though.
Also, there was one time when he was doing drill, and somebody gave the wrong signal, and it was supposed to be a drill as if they had to abandon the missile and scramble. Well, before they abandon the missile, they're supposed to put a self-destruct charge of C4 with a little golf ball sized detonator on it. Well, the word got back quick enough that one of the sergeants pulled the detonator whose pin had been pulled and tossed it up in the air. My brother said that there was a little pop as it came down, where the little golf ball detonator went off in midair. Of course, C4 without a detonator is just Play-Doh, or, you know, it's very stable.
Yeah, just plastic.
Right, you know, it might as well be modeling clay or whatever. In fact, that's how come a lot of times they would cook over.
Yeah, yeah, we sometimes use it to heat up sea rations in Vietnam.
Speaking of sea rations, downstairs I have a few cans of B rations, which are actually C rations, that I got during the blizzard of 78, the Sunday before they opened the roads up here. I was filling sandbags from the stuff that the storm had washed up on our regional beach here, and I went up to my town hall and or to a school near my town hall, and I got into the 6x6, and I had a half hour ride in the back of a 6x6 and a week after the blizzard of 78. So I may have a sandbag, and I have some B rations, and I have the shovel from the spade from that adventure.
Well, I managed to bring home my can opener from basic training. I carried me all the way through the Army, and I kept it for about 30 years and then somehow lost it on a camping trip.
Is that a P-38 or P-39?
I would have said P-38, but I wasn't positive of the number. Yeah, P-38 is what I remembered. I knew you'd know if I said it right, I knew you'd know what it was, but I was afraid I had the number wrong after 45 years or so. I kept it on my key ring for just years and years, for literally decades. And I had it, it was the first P-38 I got out of the first package of C rations, probably on bivouac in basic training at Fort Devens in 1969. And it went on my key ring and stayed there for probably 30 years.
They hauled you clear up here to go to basic?
For some reason, because of my MOS, they did that. I don't know why, but everybody who was, I was in the Army Security Agency, and we all went there for basic, even if there was a closer place, like in my case, Louisiana would have been the right place there was a place in Louisiana there was closer for me, and there was one in Texas, I think, that may have been a little further away that would have been appropriate as well. But I went to Missouri because we all went to Missouri and we never met each other up there. But for some reason, that's where we went. Mostly we hobnobbed with draftees from the south side of Chicago.
Devens in Missouri? I didn't know that they had two of them.
I'm sorry. Fort Leonard Wood.
Yes, my brother's alma mater.
I went to Fort Devens was where I did go to Fort Devens for my AIT. That's where I was. That's where I went for all my electronics training and stuff like that. Like I said, it's been a couple of decades, so you're right. Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, is where I had my basic training, where they sent all ASA people. And then if you were doing, a lot of us went to Fort Devens. I noticed you said MIT, so I've certainly been along that, I've been on the MIT campus before. Because if you go to Fort Devens, and I was up there for 13 months, and Friday afternoon, you walk out on Route 2 and stick out your thumb.
Well, you were learning to live dangerously, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. Sleeping in the park, under the public garden, bus station.
Well, I mean, dealing with Massachusetts drivers is nearly as hazardous as being over in Nam.
I think that may have been a different time. We could hitchhike anywhere. And they'd see your short hair and say, that's a soldier and he'll be okay. And he'd stop and pick you up. So I was up in a friend of mine, a guy from California had cousins up in New Hampshire that he had never met. And he decided one day that we were going to that he was going to hitchhike up to New Hampshire to visit him, and he didn't call him or anything. And he asked if I wanted to go with him. So I said, sure, I'll go with you. So we hitchhiked up to New Hampshire. It took 2 rides from Fort Devens all the way up to some place halfway up New Hampshire. And we, coming back, we thought we were in so much trouble because it was 5 o'clock in the afternoon and we were on a road that had a 2-lane asphalt road with no traffic. The second car that stopped took us all the way to Highway 2, and the next car that picked us up took us to the gate. So we had 2 cars up there and 2 cars back. And that was kind of the way it went. The only place you couldn't hitchhike was out of Boston. You literally couldn't get a ride going out of Boston.
Yeah, well, I'm far more familiar with the Boston part of the mass drivers. Out in the country, that's it might as well be a different country when you get outside 128 or 495 where Devens and stuff is located.
Yeah, typically what we'd do is, or at least what I did, I would grab my camera and I would hitchhike into Boston. And because the bus was way cheaper than a motel, I would ride the bus. I would hitchhike into town, which was easy. And then you ride subways wherever you wanted to go. I love the subway system. I'd never been on a subway being from a small town in East Texas. And in fact, I'd never even been on an escalator. I remember the first escalator I was ever on was in Boston. I thought it was so cool. And then you catch the last bus out of Boston going back to Fort Devens and stay the night. If you wanted to be in Boston on Saturday and Sunday, you hitchhike in on Saturday morning and Sunday morning.
Yep, that sounds interesting.
But I was a 19-year-old kid when I got up there, and I was never been away from home before. And like I said, 13,000 population town in East Texas, stupid as just dumb kid. And just discovered the world, you know, looking all over. The subways were fantastic. I walked the campus of Harvard University and MIT and I went to lots of places that I thought were just so fascinating, and met some nice people in the, in fact, it was after I got my orders for Vietnam, I met some nice people over at the public garden that offered to help me get to Canada so I wouldn't have to go.
Well, also, you probably had a rather interesting awakening a few blocks from the public garden.
What do you mean?
Well, back in that day, there was a district that...
Now, you say no more. I know exactly. I know exactly what you're talking about, and I was there.
Well, evidently, after my brother came back from service, he spent considerable time, money, and brain cells in that district.
Yeah, I love Boston.
Actually, he even married a lady who was a performer in that district.
Outstanding.
Well, she was from the Carolinas, and... besides her trade, she was, let's say she was getting middle age, but she was a lady who, still had to bark on.
I think we call that the combat zone.
Yes, that's about as far as you can go without going not safe for work. Yes, the combat zone.
No, I mean, that was what we called it. That was exactly what we called it. But I loved all parts of Boston. I really enjoyed going over to Harvard, and to Harvard Square was fantastic. And sitting in the coffee shops and going over to I'd never, that was more interesting than MIT. MIT was more sterile. But there were so many places over on the East End, the little restaurants and family play things where you're so out of place, Chinese restaurant where there's no English anywhere on the menu. And they look at you and you just go in and you order something that you know the name of in Chinese, and it was good food and it cost practically nothing, instead of going to the big place a few blocks away that had a great big neon dragon in front of it where a bowl of noodles was $9 or something.
Yeah, and did you go up to the Italian neighborhoods?
Yeah, I got lucky there. One of the guys in my class was an Italian kid from Somerville? What's close there? Something it starts with an S and V-I-L-E on the end.
Somerville.
It is Somerville. Okay. That's a lot of Italian people, and I got invited up there to visit his family one weekend and stay with him. He had six beautiful sisters, and we ate Italian food, and I took one of his sisters out, or she took me out, and we had fun and walked the beaches and enjoyed the neighborhood. Yeah, that was great. And the little Italian shops are like just like the Chinese places, you know, you go to the one that doesn't look like a restaurant. It looks like somebody's home or something. You went a screen door and three or four tables, and the menu is written on the chalkboard. Yeah, I did. I went there. That was great.
Yep, I used to work on a internet cafe up there in Somerville. Not only that, I used to get a kick out of taking the bus from Leechmere, Green Line, just beyond the Science Museum and stuff. And I took the bus up there, and they had the bus announcing the stops, and they said McGowan Square. Now, McGowan Square tells me that was programmed maybe in Phoenix. It wasn't programmed in Boston. It probably wasn't programmed in Chicago, maybe L.A. It's Magoon, man. Magoon Square.
I didn't know where you were going with that.
Every time that bus said McGowan Square, I said, what the heck?
Yeah, computers, you know, you don't know what neighborhood they came from.
It was a voice recording, so whenever the GPS or whatever signaled a certain thing, they would say this stop, that stop, whatever. It wasn't even a person.
Oh, was it like a recorded, or was it digital? I guess it was it long enough ago that it wasn't digital, it was actually recorded?
It was recorded human voice, probably little snippets. You know, they would say, you know, so-and-so street, this and that street, this stop, this square. But when they said McGowan Square, I said, wait a minute, there's a bug in the system.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I live in Houston, and we've got some streets that are, you know, they're mispronounced. It's all you can say. They're just mispronounced, and but that's the way they've been saying them in Houston for 100 years or so, and so that's the way they're supposed to be pronounced around here, just like any other street, any other town. You say it the way the locals say it.
Well, what I get a kick out of, I take the local public transportation, and we have a square where you go through a light. It's like we're famous for our five corners, all sorts of roads coming in from all sorts of angles. Well, you come across this square, and then they go halfway down the block, and the spiel that they're using is the same spiel that they used when I was a kid and the buses were run by GM or whoever, private buses. However, the spiel hasn't been updated because originally the bus would go across the square, stop in front of a Rexall drugstore, and then people could get off and cross over to buses going down the main drag the other way, because that headed down the coast to, and we were coming from a more inland route. Well, they still have the same rules, but they say, here's a place where you change buses. But they moved the stop half a block down, so now you're in the middle of a four-lane undivided highway. So if you try to cross the street there, it wouldn't be good. Yet they haven't updated it to move the crossover down to the next stop that has a crosswalk at it and a light.
But the bus didn't stop there, did it?
The bus stops in the middle of the block, and then they say, well, yeah, if you want to catch the buses on the other side of the street, here's where you get off. The spiel is from my childhood, when the stop was half a block up there where there was a cross.
So you would have to then walk a half a block or so before you could cross over?
You'd have to walk half a block up or half a block down.
That's cool.
The thing is that the system is running the same spiel that was invented when I was a kid, or maybe in the 50s.
Or the 40s.
Well, I think in the 40s, there were probably trolleys in this area.
And they didn't tell you when to get off.
Well, the trolley routes would be a little different. In fact, as I was a kid, around my neighborhood, they were doing some flood control and stuff, and they were pulling up the pavement. And in the pavement was the trolley track. Probably hadn't been used for 20 years, but, you know, they'd been buried in. When the trolleys stopped running, they just tarred over the track.
Well, that's the easy way to do it. I guess you could call it rebar.
Yeah, well, what happened was that up the valley or in a branching valley off of where I live, they have a couple of impoundments. Well, one of the impoundments, we had a heavy rain on top of snowmelt in the spring, and this four-foot diameter culvert overflowed onto one of our streets here, named with usual New England brilliance, Water Street. So for a while, there was, you know, 4 inches of water running down Water Street. After this incident, they finished the flood control that put a siphon on the outer dam of the impound, so that when the water gets high, the excess is diverted to its own underground channel out to tidal water. But during that emergency, the stream by my house, which is usually 4 or 5 feet down the bank vertically was getting darn close to my lawn. But now we have a flood control that keeps everything under control. And unlike a lot of places around here, we don't have to worry about the old dams causing a flood problem in the spring. But it was a little exciting for a time here. Well, thank you for your patience. I tend to rattle on when I get a chance.
No, I'm enjoying the conversation. You ought to listen to some of my war stories sometimes.
Sir, it would be my pleasure. Also, one of the things that my grandfather was a coal miner. He worked his way up from driving horses at age 12 through for a limestone mine to eventually leasing properties and doing strip mining and finally some deep mining. But also in the same area of West Virginia, up near Morgantown, where the university is, where the, you know, and the football team and the basketball team and everything, I had the experience of seeing a walking drag line, one of the big old stripping shovels, so big it didn't have caterpillar tracks. It had 2 feet and a platform, and the thing moved around by basically walking on those 2 long feet and lifting the base up and moving forward and like that. And this was a drag line with a bucket you could probably drive a bus into.
I've seen pictures of those drag lines, so I knew what you were talking about, but I've certainly never seen anything like that in person.
Quite impressive.
I have seen the vehicle that moves the space shuttle from the building where they put it together to the launch pad, though, and that's pretty impressive, too.
Well, what's interesting about those vehicles, there are only two of them in the world, is they were also used for the moonshot rockets.
I thought they were for that, but originally built for that, but I didn't remember for sure, so I didn't say that. Those were the ones that were built for the moon rocket.
Not only that, they're lost technology.
How? I mean, it's just four Caterpillar kind of diesel vehicles all strapped together with a big platform on them and some kind of computerized thing to keep them level, keep the platform level no matter what the things do. I seems like that would be pretty simple. You could do that with some kind of a little Linux computer.
Well, but the thing is, those tracks and that machinery, the blueprints to those are no longer, they weren't archived anywhere.
I've heard that was true about the Saturn V. I didn't know about the crawler, whatever they call that thing.
I'm just saying that if those things...
I'm sorry you cut out. I can't hear you.
Nobody knows how to build another unit if they need it, because the original plans are long gone.
Yeah, we would just get, like 4 Teslas and strap them together or something now.
Yeah, really.
I'm sure that wouldn't be a problem. I've seen the thing parked quite a few times, but I've never seen it on the move. I really wish it. That was one of the things I was always hoping to do, would be able to be in Florida whenever they were moving a shuttle out to the launch pad. I worked for the program for 24 years, and I got to go out to the Cape not often, but quite a few times. And I got to see exactly one launch of the space shuttle and one launch of a one of the moon rovers. But the that one I didn't get to see, and I would have liked to have seen that.
Well, my one of my uncles worked for ComSat at Goddard Space Flight Center, and he did a lot of the unmanned launches, satellites and such, you know, probes and such. In fact, one of the last projects he worked on while he was still with ComSat was the command relay satellite that was used with that recent rocket test. They were replacing ground stations with satellites that would beam commands would be beamed up to a relay satellite, and that satellite would be told to beam that commands at another satellite who was in higher orbit or something.
Yeah, I was familiar with that. We were able to close. I had a lot to do with that. They were able to close a number of those stations because places like Australia, by having several satellites, and the signal would go up to one satellite, across to another satellite, and then down is the way it worked. And at least that's what I remember. So that's how they fixed the having, you know, those ground stations all over the world.
Yeah, well, what I find incredible is that the Voyager probes are still functional to some degree.
Ain't that something?
And from the thing that I listened to on YouTube, they're not only functional, but they are dealing with, on at least one unit, a flaky transmitter transceiver, and they've had to basically reprogram, including using a new data compression algorithm, compression and error correction algorithm, over the remotely.
Yeah, they've done some really, really clever stuff to keep that thing working, and also with the Hubble, they've done some clever stuff to keep it working when they had two or three gyroscopes not working.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.